the download. Academy Award-winning actor Jeff Bridges, Chicago radio legend Kevin Matthews, and another installment of The Swap Meet. Now here's your host, a man who doesn't think the pommel horse looks that hard, Justin Coffey.
Seriously, just get up there, swing around a couple times, nice little dismount, land. What's so hard? Welcome to The Download, everybody. I'm Justin Coffin here on 720 WGN with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Looking forward to the evening. We got a great show lined up. Very excited to talk to you tonight. Jeff Bridges is joining us. How exciting is that, huh? How exciting is that Jeff Bridges is going to be with us here on WGN Radio? Come on. Academy Award winner. He's been nominated pretty much for every movie he's ever done. It's pretty interesting. Like, everything from Last Picture Show, True Grit. He won for Crazy Heart. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the one he wasn't nominated for is the best movie of all time, The Big Lebowski. So that is coming up. We're going to do that right after the news here, 7:30. It's pretty great to have him on.
Is he our first Academy Award winner?
That's a great question.
I think he probably is. Well, no. Yeah, he probably is.
Yeah, he probably is. I'm trying to think if, I mean, it's this. I put it up on social media today that he was going to be on, and I don't think I've had as much response. People are so excited about Jeff Bridges because he represents so many different time periods and genres.
Right.
And he's here because the movie Hell or High Water is coming out, and that's something that, that's a big deal, right? To have that. So. And we had David McKenzie on yesterday, so today we go with Jeff Bridges.
Great.
Which is nice counter-programming to preseason football. Chicago Bears playing tonight at Soldier Field against the Denver Broncos. That's going to be worthless in about 5 minutes.
How's it going so far?
The Bears, if I'm not mistaken, just forced a second or third down. So that's where we're at in the game. Right. I think they're on the first drive, but the Broncos converted on a 3rd and 10. And they're on their way, so all that is coming up. All right, what else tonight? We've got a great show lined. I'm so excited, too, because Kevin Matthews is going to join us tonight. He wrote a new book, Broken Mary, A Journey of Hope. I'm excited to talk to Kevin Matthews.
Right.
Kevin Matthews is a Chicago radio legend. I can't tell you, I mean, how much impact he's had on my life, but also on so many other Chicagoans. Just think about all the people who've listened, all the Kev heads who've listened to Kevin Matthews over the years at AM1000, The Loop. He is royalty here in Chicago, and he's a big part of the family here at WGN. Worked with Jimmy DeCastro for years. It's great to talk to him. He's living in Michigan. He was diagnosed with MS back in 2008, which has kind of taken him off of live radio. He does a podcast for the Doll Network, but we'll talk with him. I really want to talk to him about his career and what makes talk radio work, especially when it comes from that genre, right? That 80s, 90s AM radio, that was some of the best stuff ever. That lineup where you had Brandmeier and you had Kevin Matthews, Stephen Gary. And that was, I mean, it's tremendous. Howard Stern was involved in that crew. I mean, Kevin Matthews was just it. He's an it guy.
Danny Bonaduce.
Bonaduce. And we will talk to him about Jim Shorts. We got to ask about Jim Shorts, right? So that's also coming up tonight on the download. Ian Abramson's going to join us. Ian Abramson, a great Chicago comedian who is now in Los Angeles. He's got a Comedy Central web series called 7 Minutes in Purgatory. It's a great concept. I was just explaining to Brian and Anna that he puts comics in a back of a truck, like a U-Haul truck. He dresses it up and puts a camera in there. And so they do their act, their stand-up act, to this camera. And then inside the theater, which is where the truck is parked behind it, there's an audience. And they watch him on the screen, him or her on the screen. And it's just it's an awesome train wreck and a social experiment to watch a stand-up comedian not have an interaction with an audience and wonder if, and not even know because they're wearing like the little soundproof ears in there, which I don't know why they have to in the... But it's really just about limiting their senses and they do their stand-up. And most of the time it devolves into them just doing improv and things because they don't know if their jokes are hitting or what. And there's great, if you go to ComedyCentral.com, I think there's a whole season. There's like 10 episodes, 10 different comics doing it. Ian's coming back to do Virgin Hotels this weekend, so we will talk with him about that show and his success. Also tonight, Raven Lanae is going to be on. She's a great R&B singer, soul singer. She's putting out her first full-length album. It was an EP called Moonshoes, and then she's had so much success in the last couple months, she's just been picked up everywhere. Everything from the breakout artist here at WGCI to getting on festivals, starting to guest on other people's stuff, that she's making that Moonshoes a full-length album, which just came out this month. So we'll talk with her, Southside kid, who, and when I say kid, she's a kid. She's 17 years old. Imagine that. To have this much success, to be able to perform and put out an album, have everybody in the music industry paying attention to you. You're 17 years old. She's coming tonight with her mom, right? that's her management. That's amazing. And her music is so good. It really is. Like, I was like, oh, we're going to have to, you know, I have to shift my paradigm a little bit, and right away I'm like, oh, so we're going to have a teenager on, talk about their music. Oh, okay. And then I started listening, I put it on, and I was like, this is mature, developed, really, really great music. And she's 17 years old. And I found other stuff. She's guesting on stuff with Saba and others. She's sort of the du jour right now. So we'll talk with Raymond, who will be on the program coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Of course, Molly Green's going to be back. She's going to fan jam the Olympics. She's watching tonight the primetime events and also the tape stuff that we can't talk about. She's watching all that stuff so she can let us know what happened, because we can't. We're doing a show. We're talking to Jeff Bridges and Kevin Matthews, so we're not going to talk about the Olympics. But she does that. She'll tell us what's the greatest moments, what's the broadcast moments, what's the awkward, funny stuff. It's been good. It's been fun. I feel like I know what's happening in the Olympics because of Molly. That's coming up around 9:30. And tonight, Greg Flamm back in studio for Swap Meet. Love this guy. At DuPage Picker on Twitter. Essentially, he goes around to estate sales and garage sales and rummage sales, and he finds stuff that he then puts on eBay and resells essentially like a tchotchke market. And there's so many different things that he is able to sell and make some considerable money doing it. He was saying to us last week that he goes out and, you know, there'll be a line before estate sales start. Like if there's an estate sale tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, there'll be 20, 30 people like chomping at the bit to get in when it starts, and everyone just mad dashes to find whatever they can. So this is becoming sort of a cottage industry, finding junk and reselling it online. But Greg comes in, 312-981-7200, and he evaluates your junk. It's great. And some of your memorabilia, too. You call up. You tell us where you got it. I got this I got this Schlitz sign. It's great. It's in the form of a waitress. It pours Schlitz. How much? Oh, that's real good. That's good. Yeah. I'll give you $200 for it. that's the bit, right? And it works. And I love it. And it's one of my favorite things to do on the radio, because you get to hear from all a Download Nation calling in with cool stuff, you know? So keep it up tonight. I want to know what we can evaluate. So that's coming up. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Veronica Carter and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman. This is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the carryout. So stay with us. All right, it's a Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. We got a great show, so let's get it started with the carryout. This, of course, our nightly segment where I read the news. So you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Donald Trump continues to go after ISIS by way of his Democratic rivals. He told a rally that Barack Hussein Obama, okay, was the founder of ISIS. And when asked for clarification, he told the press that it was literal, that he believes Obama was the founder of ISIS. Now, we get that he's playing to the fact that Obama and Clinton's foreign policy may have given birth to the rise of ISIS. But see, that's not literal. That's more like hyperbole, conjecture, political speak. It's everything but literal. Sorry to be a literal Nazi here, but wait, that
That came out wrong. Hillary Clinton made her long-awaited speech on the economy today in Detroit, and it was a snooze. A lot about what the other guy plans to do. Not much on her ideas. It's like when you forgot to write a speech for your final presentation, so you just start doing your mama jokes. Literally. Mayor Emanuel was all jacked up today that there wasn't a scandal as he was introducing construction on a new runway at O'Hare. This should ease congestion and keep planes running on time, unless the computers go out and then, well, you know, it's your fault for even trying to fly. What were you thinking? Another kid fell from an amusement park ride today, this time in Pittsburgh. He was air-vac'd after falling from a roller coaster. Come on, geez, this after the terrible news at the water park in Kansas and another incident 3 in 4 days. Nah. I'm out. I'll just get my kicks riding long escalators at the mall. Macy's is closing another 100 stores after earnings fell over 17%. They say they just can't keep up with customers moving to discount chains like Walmart and Target. Yeah, agreed. Or, I don't know, stop charging $200 for jeans. Or at least take a couple bucks off the ties. And don't even get me started on the bras. I mean, who wants to pay $50 for a bra? I mean, that's what I've been told they're worth. I just hang out by the sports equipment. Yeah. Taylor Swift is back on Twitter. She posted her first tweet since being dissed by Kim. You know what? Pass. Nope. That's not news. I'm sorry. Taylor Swift marketing herself again is not news. Give me a break. Is it true? Is Taylor Swift putting out press releases again? Arianna Huffington is leaving the Huffington Post to start up a new health and wellness site. Although I'm not sure I'd want to get health advice from a site called Huffington. I think she should start a paint website instead. As for Huffington Post, this is a huge blow to the site since Arianna was very hands-on. Who now is going to be the one that chooses the news story to copy, skin, and act like it's their own? That's a tough job. The Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ all finished at record highs today for the first time together since New Year's Eve 1999. And then Y2K ruined it. It must have been because Smash Mouth was playing Dick Clark's Rockin' Eve that year. It was a simpler time. In weather, call down to the boiler room. We need more air up here. Too hot. Although it's fun to walk down Michigan Avenue and see all the miserable faces paired with a little line of sweat forming above their stomachs. It's my favorite little line of sweat. In sports, the Cubs keep on rolling and they welcome their nemesis to Wrigley tonight. The Cardinals come in for a 4-game set. This will go a long way for the playoff pitcher. If the Cubs can sweep them out, maybe there will be a postseason without the Redbirds. Wouldn't that be sweet? John, the bald eagle Lester goes tonight for the Cubbies. On the south side, I think the Sox are still playing last night's game. Actually, they lost in 14 innings. Go for the rubber game in KC tonight. The Bears put the pads on for semi-real tonight. They're at home at Soldier Field for the first preseason game. I wonder if you preseason tailgate, like leaner cuts of meat to work up. Mm. Cutler and the first units will play a quarter or so. Then it's full-on backups, making meaningless tackles and inconsequential touchdowns. Eddie Royal and Zach Miller were spotted on the field doing light workouts, but they're probably not going to play. In Olympic news, I'm not telling. I'm done. Mostly because, once again, NBC is ruining it. Rio and NBC refused to show the gymnastic all-around individual finals for the women in real time, making us avoid the news and real life to enjoy it. Thanks for making the Olympics annoying. Anyway, spoiler alert, a little girl won. The Bulls schedule came out today, and put this on the old Google calendar. The Knicks with Joakim Noah and Derrick Rose will play at the United Center early in the season, November 4th. Although bets on one of those two players being in street clothes. And LeBron James signed a 3-year contract with the Cavs for $100 million. Overpaid. What have you ever done? Guess I gotta change the way that I hate LeBron James. And finally tonight, if you look up, you may be able to see the Perseid meteor shower, which means you'll have to go outside. Yeah. And the Olympics are on. You really want to know what happened with women gymnastics, the Bears, all that Hulu, Netflix, all the stuff you can get on Amazon Prime. You know what? You can wait till the next one. Don't even worry about it. Comes back in 2027. That's a better year anyway. That's the carry out for August 11, 2016. So hot tonight that we're closing early. But no worries. We'll just put some chicken in a pan and leave it outside our door. It's our way of giving back. More to come here on The Download. Jeff Bridges coming up after the news. We'll talk to him about hell or high water. And, of course, the dude...
dude abides. That's all coming up tonight on The Download in 720 WGN. Stay with us. You don't really have to watch the Bears tonight. I'll sum it up for you. Touchdown, Broncos. Three and out, Bears. Sack of Jay Cutler.
Is that going to be a...
That's about it.
Recurring story.
They did get a interception.
Uh-huh.
And it was a... what's his name? The new linebacker from... what's the kid from Indianapolis they picked up?
Freeman?
Freeman, yeah.
Jarrell.
50, yeah.
Jarrell.
Made a tremendous play. Like the kind of stuff where, you know, you could tell his speed, ball was tipped, and he was able to grab it, where you didn't think he had a chance on it. He said, boop, got it.
Awesome.
So, yeah, there you go. So, a little speed, a little flexibility. Alshon did play a little bit.
Really?
Yep.
All right.
So, we're looking good. We're back. I guess he's back for another series, too. I'm just looking at Twitter. So, if you just stay here with us, we'll just skip all the other programming. We'll tell Jeff Bridges to wait, and I'll just give you updates on every single... of the next 11 plays. Because that's all that's going to matter, right? I'm interested. I mean, it's going to be fun to watch the Bears this year. They're playing the... It's hard to say because they're playing the Super Bowl champs. And that defense is still the Super Bowl champion defense. So you can't tell if, you know, the Bears are just, you know, doing what they do where they can't figure out the first drive.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that's the part that they practice the entire week.
Yeah, they... Right?
They just got a false start, not a false start, but a legal motion on a handoff, and the running back was stuffed for a 2-yard loss.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of stuff.
Getting the kinks out right now.
You get them out now. I mean, Broncos, they got Mark Sanchez at quarterback. They're all ready to go. They're moving the ball at will, but Mark Sanchez looks good, too. He's throwing. There's not a lot of pressure on him. He's doing well.
It's one of those games where, you know, like it'll be 16-0, 18 or 20-0 Broncos.
Yeah.
First team will look terrible, but then, you know, your David Fales will come back and, you know, get a couple of drives and the Bears will win. I saw the Bears have, like, their winning percentage in preseason over the course of their history is like a 600 winning percentage. They dominate preseason football.
They are great. Third and fourth quarter, they move the ball at will.
Yeah, 3-1 last year.
It's from the Caleb Haney days, just obliterating preseason competition. And that's where we're all like, he should be the quarterback. Then he gets in there, you're like, Last year, we're like, yep, another sack for Jay Cutler. And they're off the field. 3-and-out. That's, you know what, I'm done with it. We're done with talking about the Bears. Veronica, is that okay? We're done talking about the Bears?
Sure, because, yeah, it just may not go anywhere this year.
Well, I mean, till the next game. Let's say we're done talking about the Bears for now.
Okay. I thought you meant for the season, and it hadn't even started.
That would be great if I was so riled up and just so mad at the Bears after the first preseason drive that I'm like, that's it!
Well, look at all the stress it would save.
I know,
all those
you're right.
games that you wouldn't have to, like, you know, bite the nails and...
That's when you know you're a Chicago Bears fan, when you get to like week 6. And I did this on the final year of Dick Geron. I remember this. Cordell Stewart was the quarterback. I was so dismayed with the team that I just gave up football.
Mm-hmm.
And I did some great things that fall. I went horseback riding. It was real nice.
I used to be really addicted to baseball. I mean.
And then what happened?
I had to like take a breather because... My whole life was like centering around. I was like getting upset too much.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a hard game to be obsessed with because it just never stops.
Yeah. And you know what? I loved it so much. I didn't care that the games were so long.
And you know, you sit through 9 innings and then the next day there's another 9 innings. At least with football, you get it once a week.
Exactly.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the new movie Hell or High Water opens in theaters today. The film stars Chris Pine and Ben Foster as two brothers robbing banks across West Texas. And they're being chased by a soon-to-be-retired Texas Ranger played by Academy Award-winning actor Jeff Bridges. The film is just the latest in Bridges' collection of great performances. How about his role in Last Picture Show or True Grit, Crazy Heart, or playing the dude in the best movie ever made, The Big Lebowski. Bridges is no stranger to the silver screen. He was in his first film at the tender age of one. Jeff Bridges is one of my favorites, and he's my guest tonight on The Download. Mr. Bridges, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Hey, great to be with you.
All right, so what drew you to this script? What was it about Hell or High Water that got you involved?
Well, a few things. I guess just how well the script was written. You know, I could tell that this writer, Taylor Sheridan, really knew what he was writing about. It really rang so true. It turns out his cousin is a marshal in Texas, and you know, he knows a lot about that. And then also the kind of the ambiguity, you know, of the whole thing. You know, right and wrong is sort of a is not as black and white as you know, we might often think, and that kind of drew me to the picture. And then when I found out that David McKenzie was going to be directing, that was a big plus. I had seen his film Start Up, which is wonderful, and I figured pairing those two guys together, Taylor Sheridan and the writer of the script, and David McKenzie, would be a good idea. Then, as the cast came together, it all started to fall in place in a beautiful way.
Well, we talked with David McKenzie yesterday on the program, and you know, one thing he talked about was this was a simple plot but a complex story. I mean, the characters and the idea, like you just said, the right and wrong and good and bad. It really does.
Yeah.
It really is more than just a heist story.
Yeah, it's true. I love movies that sort of transcend their genres. You know, some people describe it as a modern day Western, and I think there's some, you know, you can make parallels there. I mean, I'm just really pleased with the way the movie came out and had a great time making it.
Let me ask you about genres. Obviously, you've done some Western stuff in your career before. One of the other things David talked about was getting this film right. Being a Scottish filmmaker, he really wanted to capture the space, make the environment part of the character. For you, you know, being a part of this genre before, do you feel that the movie did that? That it captured West Texas, but it also captured sort of the nuances of the Western genre?
Yeah, I think so. You know, one of the themes in so many Westerns is, you know, the times they are a-changing, you know, whether it's, you know, automobiles replacing horses, or in this case, you know, banks coming in and replacing people, being more self-sufficient, you know. And so I think that, you know, that's true. And then David, you know, being a foreigner, is a Scottish fella, you know, coming in and having really fresh eyes can often give a more interesting and sometimes more accurate view of our country, I think. And that was, you know, interesting. And his desire to get it right, you know.
Yeah, right. Let's talk about the character. I mentioned at the top, Marcus is a soon-to-be-retired Texas Ranger. What do you bring to a character like Marcus? What are you trying to do with the role that brings a little Jeff Bridges to it?
Well, you want to do justice to the story, you know, when it's written so well. And the script really gives you the key to how to play the thing. And I usually start with, you know, myself, see aspects of my own life that I can, that the character relates to. And then look for role models. And in this case, we were so fortunate to have the renowned Texas Ranger Joaquin Jackson with us, who, you know, helped us so much in getting that authentic vibe going, you know. As far as myself, you know, my character teases my partner, played by Gil Birmingham, quite a bit. And I come from a family of teasers, so you know, I was familiar with that whole deal.
Putting yourself into roles and finding parts of your life to parallel what the character's going through, that's how you approach the craft. Is that similar? I mean, think of other characters you've played. I think of the dude, Big Lebowski. What do you draw out of the dude that's part of your life?
Oh, well, yeah, that, you know, it kind of reminds me of a version of myself from high school, you know. I'm probably a little more, I don't know, ambitious or act active, or I don't know, the dude had his own brand of activities, I guess. But yeah, the dude was so much fun to play. You know, a lot of the wardrobe was my wardrobe. You know, Mary Zofries, the costumer, came over to my house. I said, let's go up to my closet and just look around, see if there's something that strikes you.
That's great. The you know, how much does a character like the dude manifestation, or a character that's written by the Coen brothers that's on the script, and how much of it is what you bring to it?
Well, it's kind of it's a combo, you know. And then you know, you mentioned the Coen brothers; they're real masters, you know, the directors. And I like to use the directors to kind of help me get my act together, you know. Kind of empower them to have power over me, sort of, you know, so it's, I'm not playing myself, but a kind of a version that's a combination of, you know, the character and like you say, what I, you know, personally bring to the thing, and kind of turn it over to them and let them dial it in.
We're talking with Jeff Bridges, the Academy Award-winning actor. The new movie Hell or High Water opens in theaters today. You know, you've been involved with so many different movies over your time, but a lot of cult classics. I'm interested because, you know, even from Lebowski, which we're talking about, but Tron, you even had a little bit of a cult following with Hearts of the West in the mid-70s. Also, Iron Man being a part of the San Diego Comic-Con experience. Talk about that, being a part of being an actor who's in movies that transcend the time that they come out and they turn into something more.
Yeah, it's kind of mysterious, you know, and wonderful. You know, with Lebowski, when it first came out, it really didn't do too much in America. It really kind of was a bigger hit in Europe and then splashed back over in our shores, you know, a few years later, and then became this, you know, cult thing. And we got Lebowski festivals, and you know, my band, the Abiders, we mm-hmm. played a few of those, and it's so much fun. And you know, to get to have people enjoy a film that much is really wonderful. You know, they bring so much to the experience, especially when you're watching it in a room with other people who love a movie so much. It's kind of contagious, you know, and you really... And then a movie like Lebowski, I mean, every time I see the movie, I seem to enjoy it more than the last time. I mean, you know, it's so rich and filled with great stuff. You know, that's, I think, one of the marks of... masters, you know, whether they're painters or filmmakers, you know, they make it look easy. You know, you don't see the effort involved, but that's one of my favorite movies. I'm biased, of course. I'm in the thing, but I mean, I think it would have been, even if I wasn't in it, I would appreciate how well it was made.
One of the great things about that script and what plays out, and you're right, every time you see it, something you find something new. But one of the awesome things too is the ensemble. I mean, the way that you guys are able to play as a group and in those scenes, it's a Hell or High Water. There's a lot where it's just you and Gil in the scenes, but in Lebowski, there's the scenes in the bowling alley. There's other places where you guys are just doing straight up theater. You know, it reads like theater. Do you like that kind of thing? Is there a preference you have as an actor to playing more ensemble or playing more sort of person to person?
No, I like all the different ways it can be. I think, you know, you mentioned what as you were speaking, what came to mind is just the tone, you know, mm-hmm. to get the tone right and to see that everybody in the film is kind of in the same world, you know. I think that is the case with Lebowski, which is a very different tone than Hell or High Water, but it's you know, kind of the same assignment, you know, for the people who are making it. I think get the tone right, you know, that we're all into the same story.
It's hard to believe that Lebowski is coming up on 20 years. That's going to be
isn't that something?
Something to think about. Yeah, I you know, and I don't pretend to know your life, but the idea that I'm sure that more people than not are coming up to you still on the street and saying the dude and trying to give you high fives, things of that nature.
Oh man,
how does it feel for that to happen, to be sort of identified as the dude, as the shining moment of your illustrious, legendary Academy Award winning career?
It's so funny. I just, you know, 5 minutes ago, I signed a couple of, you know, bowling pins. You know, that's a, you know, kind of a, you know, a normal thing that happens, you know, throughout the day. It's just, you know, it's kind of bizarre, but I suppose you get used to it to a certain degree.
Jeff Bridges is in the new movie Hell or High Water, which is out in theaters. I can't thank you enough for taking some time out to talk to us, not only about Hell or High Water or Lebowski, one of the greatest movies ever made. Congrats on the success of this movie, and thank you again for taking some time out and for such a great career entertaining us all.
All right.
Mr. Bridges,
nice
thanks.
Nice chatting with you.
Always good to talk to Jeff Bridges on a Thursday night in Chicago. How great was that? I will say, I do truly stand by the idea that The Big Lebowski is one of the best films ever made. And I know that that is cliche since it's so popular and everyone seems to like it. But it's one of those movies, as Jeff Bridges just told us, that you can watch over and over and still find something new from it. And it's so true. I can't tell you how many times you flip through the channels and there's nothing going. You're like, let's watch Lebowski. And then you watch it. And then you know, I always found with Lebowski, there's a point in that movie where they're just on such a roll. I mean, it's unreal. And then you hit a point maybe with about 20 minutes to go where you're just kind of like, wow, this is too much. Like, it's just too good. Maybe when they get to the point where he's knocked out again and they do the weird dream sequences. But once you power through that and you watch it over and over and over, and then you actually get to that point and you're not so laughed out and you watch that part, it's brilliant. The end scene when the dude and Walter are spreading the ashes, that's great stuff.
I was thinking when he was talking about it, I mean, I know, you know, he's had a obviously a tremendous career, and how people ask, sign bowling pins.
Yeah.
And obviously he's a star of the movie, but you know, John Goodman and Steve Buscemi are also tremendous. Yeah. John Turturro's awesome in it. And I guess it's not really, it's not their movie.
It's Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges. But I wonder if they get, does Walter or John Goodman get bothered, you know,
I mean, John Goodman's been a lot of great stuff as well. I mean, I don't know as much as Jeff Bridges in the career. I mean, Jeff Bridges has been in 30-some odd movies. But yeah, I mean, if I saw John Goodman, maybe you're right. Like, I guess I would probably, it wouldn't be the first thing that pops into mind that's Walter Sobchak, you know? Although it should be, because that's John Goodman's best role. And maybe that's what it is, you know, with the Coen brothers. Maybe it has something to do with it's every one of them's, it's their best role. John Turturro, I don't know if John Turturro's been funnier. And he's been in a lot of great stuff.
Yeah.
And he's in a lot of serious stuff, too. You know, I would put up Lebowski or Transformers 2 for Turturro. No, but I mean, that may have something to do with it, right? The idea that Philip Seymour Hoffman's in a lot of great stuff. He's a lot of great stuff. But I don't know if there's anything that rivals his role in maybe Boogie Nights.
Capote.
Right. I mean, those are all good movies. Yeah. But again, I don't think there's anything as good as him and Lebowski. As First Lady of the Nation.
Yes.
It's so good.
And Capote is, you know, it's a fine movie. I remember seeing it in the theaters. I think he may have won an Oscar for that role. But that's if you saw that on cable,
no, I wouldn't stop.
You probably wouldn't watch it. Lebowski?
Same with Bridges. He won for Crazy Heart, didn't he? He won Best Actor. I mean, that's not a movie I'm going to stop on and be like, got to watch over and over and over. I mean, we keep going. I mean, Steve Buscemi's been in a ton of stuff. And I don't know if there's anything better than Donnie. Right? Right? I mean, you know he's been in a ton of stuff, and you're like, Steve Buscemi's so, I mean, he's been in so much. I remember when he was in that one. Well, I mean, big role in, Reservoir Dogs, right?
Yeah, of course.
That's a big one for him, and you'll remember him from that, but I don't know if anything surpasses his role in Big Lebowski.
I mean, he was a star of Boardwalk Empire for like 5 years.
Yeah. Julianne Moore, you can even make an argument. She's hilarious in that movie. And, you know, Jeff Bridges, you could tell, lit up when he started talking about Lebowski. I was kind of scared to make that transition because it's 20 years old and he always gets asked about it. 5 minutes ago, he's signing bowling pins.
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't want to talk about it. He's like, I'm promoting this new movie. But you almost, got the feeling it was the other way around. Like he was almost like he's on the tour and he's like, well, it's a modern Western. But then when we started talking Lebowski, he's
Yeah.
He even sounded like the dude.
He did. It's just like when he just came on and I don't know, hearing that voice is incredible.
Yeah. And again, it's one of those movies, you know, when you think about the ensemble and some of the scenes, especially in the bowling alley, when they're talking about whether or not Bunny did it, and I can get your toe. And that whole thing, those are tremendous scenes. If you break down and just do the script, and you, I mean, that could be, I for a long time, you know, we were talking about maybe trying to do like a late night off theater run of Big Lebowski. This was like 2000, 2001. Like even before that. Movie came out in 97 or 98. And so the goal, we were like, this is hilarious. What if we did it after the Schadenfreude sketch show? What if we did the Lebowski stage show? And then you could think about how creative and interpretive you could be with all of those, the way the imagery in that movie, from the dream sequences to Totoro's scene with the bowling ball. And I think over time it happened. I think that there is like a Lebowski late night kind of show, mm-hmm. that, you know, parody show kind of thing. But, I mean, we were drawn to doing that not because it would be, oh, how fun would it be to do Lebowski? The scene work, the Lennon and the, you know, when they're going after the, when they're trying to figure it out in the bowling alley is top notch. Go watch that now and you're like, that's amazing writing.
We're at 11.
Yeah.
this is the movie that came out after Fargo and that's probably why it didn't do so well initially in the box office. It was a little weird, but I mean, Coen brothers are always kind of weird.
They're always been like that. They've never been followed the format mm-hmm. of what a next movie should be. But because Fargo came out and it was such a big hit, I think everyone expected another movie of that caliber. Mm-hmm. Like almost Fargo's funny, but it's a drama at heart. You know, Lebowski is a parody. It's a parody of L.A. Living. It's a film noir parody. It's great. I mean, that's what makes it so great is you're like, this is really taking the format of the film noir mysteries, you know, that and Los Angeles and, you know, was it L.A. Confidential kind of thing
mm-hmm.
and really kind of make it. It's a love note slash,
wink of the eye,
you know, screw off to Los Angeles. Everything about that. The landlord, hey, you want to come see my show? To the way dude lives and there's so many like nods, winks and nods to how living in L.A. is crazy. That's what's great about that.
Also, Tara Reid's best role.
It was Tara Reid's best role.
I mean, I know Sharknado's been getting some pub, but I'm going to say that's probably Tara Reid's best role.
I mean, you go down the line, right? I mean, you really do go down the line. I don't know his name, but the guy who was in Fargo as well, who was the wood chipper guy, who plays Hans in the movie where he's a nihilist. Oh, that must be exhausting.
Yeah.
His best role. He's really good in Fargo, but there's something about him playing the nihilist boyfriend in... And I would say I would go, you know, Flea's best role.
For sure.
He was in My Own Private Idaho, Flea. So you kind of have to balance it, which one. But I think it's... Give us the money, Lebowski. Yeah, she lost her toe of Lichtenberry pancakes.
So good.
It's so good. All the way across. It's really good. All right, coming up, Kevin Matthews. Great conversation. I mean, come on. One of the best radio guys to have ever done radio here in Chicago. I'm so excited to talk to him because he really is. Like, I mean, there's a blink of an eye and I'm back in my Dodge Colt, you know, listening to him in middays on AM 1000 and just saying, this is what radio should be and this is what I want to do. I want to be like Kevin Matthews in the big market. And so we'll talk with Kev coming up here after the news at 8 o'clock. He's my guest at the big table. Stay with us. Welcome back to the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, you wouldn't expect my next guest to write a book called Broken Mary, A Journey of Hope. It sounds like a title of a religious self-help book. But it fits for a man who continues to overcome life's challenges. And that man is Kevin Matthews. Kev is a Chicago radio legend. He was part of a lineup on The Loop and AM 1000 that included Jonathan Brandmeier and Stephen Gary, even Howard Stern for a moment in time. Kevin and his characters made Kevheads of us all, including myself, who realized the potential of radio as not just a place to be funny or entertaining, but a place for community. And it wasn't just characters and bits. It was talk. It was real Chicago talk.
Kevin Matthews left the Chicago market for a gig in his hometown, Grand Rapids, back in 2005. In 2008, his life changed when he was diagnosed with MS. Since then, Kevin's continued to be heard with a podcast on the Doll Network and through his memoir, Broken Mary, A Journey of Hope. Kevin Matthews, my guest tonight at the big table. Kevin Matthews, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Justin. Thank you very much for the invite.
Why don't we start right at the beginning? What drew you into radio? You had a lot of options you could have done, but what drew you to doing talk radio?
It was really an accident. I was going to be, I went to college to go into, I wanted to be a teacher. And my college roommate, freshman year, he was working at the student-run radio station. He had a stereo, so I just tuned in. And then that was kind of just one thing led to another, and here we go, what, 35, 40 years later.
Well, there's so much radio that you could have done. That's what's surprising about it. I mean, you could have gone into just music radio. You could have done sports. You could have done a number of things. What drew you to developing a voice in talk radio?
Hating management and doing the direct opposite of what they said to do. So while they were asleep, usually I was on overnights, and I did play what I wanted to play. I did say what I wanted to say. Unfortunately, I also got fired many times because I didn't want to listen to management at all because I wanted to listen to the audience. What do they want? And then eventually I got real close with management, a Jimmy DeCastro, a Larry Wirt, a Greg Salk, a Dave Logan, these folks that have gone on to do great things in broadcasting. And I've always loved the fact that I'm a broadcaster. I think we've lost so many broadcasters now to where radio has just become, at times, it can be like a useless kitchen utensil. But it's all about content, and there are some great radio stations. This WGN is proof of the longevity of a great broadcast company.
Kevin, what did they want you to do? I mean, what was it that management was pushing you towards when you started in radio? Was it play this song this exact time, make sure you hit the news at the right time?
It was all that. And I got hired to do mornings, the program director. I got married. I came back from my honeymoon. He let me do mornings for about 3 days, and then he put me on overnights, and he decided to do mornings. Well, I knew that he was asleep between 11 and 1, and so I just brought in import record. I just did whatever I wanted to do, and then one morning he caught me, and then he fired me, and I just walked across the street and just kicked his ass. And then that eventually led me to Chicago.
Well, let's talk about coming to Chicago. I mean, obviously, you spent a better part of your career here in town entertaining the Chicago radio market and so many people who just grew up listening to you. Talk about the opportunity that came up for you to come here with Jimmy and Larry and everyone involved.
Jimmy DeCastro, Greg Salk was a young genius program director, and he invited me to come on up and visit Chicago from St. Louis, which I did, and the rest is history. And when you surround yourself with a Steve Dahl, a Gary Meyer, a Jonathan Brandmeier, like I said, Jimmy DeCastro was the general manager. He always said it was high school with money. He had the checkbook, and he didn't mind writing checks. And it was just a great pool of people. And we just absolutely dominated Chicago radio, everything, concerts, television. We did it all, and we all did it together with the audience.
When you were coming up from St. Louis and they flew you up and they wanted you here, what did you know about Chicago? What did you know about doing radio, or what the landscape was before you came in?
I knew that it was the Midwest. I grew up outside Detroit, and it's the Midwest. I know that everybody in Chicago, you know, there's a great rivalry of football, basketball, hockey. And I just knew that everyday people lived in Chicago. And that's what I fell in love with, is just the honesty and the hardworking people, the people that really build the city, are people who I admired.
coming in to do radio on the Loop and then AM 1000, but just the idea of being with the names that you mentioned, those are talk show royalty. I mean, everyone that, you know, from Howard Stern to Gary Meyer, everyone in between there obviously made a tremendous career in radio. Was it intimidating to come be part of that lineup?
Yeah, it you know, I mean, you better know how to ride when you saddle up. I can remember the first time I'm driving in, listening to Steve and Gary, and knowing, hey, I'm next. Or the first morning I ever talked to Howard Stern after he just, man, oh, man. I'm driving in, listening to Howard, and listen to what he's saying, and then he calls me up, and, you know, it was awesome. You just had to be honest with Howard.
The book is called Broken Mary, A Journey of Hope. It's really a memoir for Kevin Matthews. Kevin Matthews, the longtime Chicago iconic talk show host here in town for both The Loop, for AM 1000, for CKG, and so many other places. You know what, Kevin, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation here at the Big Table. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman, and I'm very excited to have at the big table tonight Kevin Matthews, longtime DJ here in Chicago, talk show host, AM 1000, The Loop, CKG. I mean, the Kev heads. Let's get right back to the conversation about, because I remember listening to you and just marveling at how you were able to create an environment, create a landscape for a radio show that included such great talent around you, no doubt, but characters. I mean, people that, you know, you were introducing to Chicago that were just parts of your personality. Talk about, you know, creating that kind of radio as opposed to sort of a straight-ahead radio show that doesn't have the voices and the other material.
Radio is theater of the mind, and so that's what I always did. You know, you listen with your ears, and then you imagine who's in the studio with me, and that's the beauty of radio. It's so simple, yet it's not easy to do. And people want to be entertained. That's the bottom line. It's all about content. People want to be entertained. I've always been a listener doing radio. I never wanted to get above my audience. I can't do that. We did everything together. We went to school together. We had kids together. We partied together. We all grew up together, and it was like an electronic life.
Yeah, story. It's really interesting too, because I mean, I kind of mentioned at the top just about radio not just being a place to be funny or to be entertaining. The best radio that's out there, and you accomplished it, is creating community. There seemed to be a community. I mean, the Kev heads followed you to shows, to Grant Park, to other places, but they also seemed to really get into, you know, you being a spokesperson for that generation. Where do you think that comes from?
I've always wanted to be honest with the audience, tell the truth. And that's how come I wrote this book. It's very vulnerable when you write your entire life story on these pages. And that's what I did on the radio. That's why I did this book, is honesty. I've always told the truth. When I was diagnosed with MS, I was over here doing radio. Their management didn't want me to get on the air and say, don't mention MS. Don't say you're sick. Well, I'm going to. It's my life. I've always been honest, and so that's always been rule number one, be honest.
And was there ever a time in your life where there were things that you're like, well, I don't want to share this with my radio audience. I want to keep this private.
No, or... I learned that a long time ago. I think even like working with Howard Stern, what I appreciate about Howard is, you know, telling secrets that you don't want to share with anybody is great radio. Mm. Is really great radio. So tell the truth, and you'll captivate people. Plus, it's healing when you are able to just tell the truth. I mean, look at political correctness. What a train wreck this is. It's just, it forces people not to talk. And you know, we're not cattle. So tell the truth.
Obviously, you were able to have longevity here in the market and be at the top of the game. I mean, your show was one that I feel like I remember being at Columbia College and, you know, being in the radio department, and people were like, that was the Holy Grail oh, you know, you will never be able to work in this market because Kevin Matthews is here. go learn how to be Kevin Matthews in Tallahassee is what they would say. But I want to ask you about the success of the people around you, because there's been a lot of great talent, but there's also been a lot of great characters, and you've been able to develop interesting and unique voices through your own, most notably Jim Shorts. Talk about where that character comes from and what pushed you to make him almost the star of the show.
It was to really piss off management. You know, they thought there was a guy in the studio with me, and I'd get a memo, hey, tell that guy not to say this or do this. And they didn't realize all I got to do is walk down the hallway, you idiot. And, you know, it's the curtains open here at the Oz, if you will. So that was just out of defiance, again, for management.
Were you surprised at how much Jim Shorts took off?
Everything. Jim was saying what everybody was thinking, you know, and it's true. And to this day, that's how come I love working with Steve Dahl on the Dahl Network, because there are no boundaries. It's remarkable what we're creating, embracing technology today.
I want to talk to you about that, about the changing way that radio, I mean, obviously, what radio is today is much different than what it was in, say, 1986, 1987, when you guys were taken off. But, you know, you have found a place on the internet to continue your stuff. I mean, it's not the same, but talk about how radio has changed, in particular for someone who's been in the driver's seat for so long. Give us insight to how the industry has changed.
Well, that's how come I admire Jimmy DeCastro, because Jimmy is so responsible for people's careers, mine. Somebody like a Dan Patrick, where, you know, he really revolutionized radio, but then also looked at this new thing, the internet. And I've always embraced technology, and that's because Jimmy DeCastro did too. We embraced technology, what you can do now. Radio is no different today than it is in 1985. I could take a radio station, and one of the reasons I came back to Michigan, I left Chicago, was I was getting bored with what I was doing, so I wanted to start over, and I did it. I came back to Michigan, and I was actually a program developer. I put radio stations on the air. I put programs on the air, and again, it's all about content. People want to be entertained, and it's not that hard. I could take one radio station and turn it around and compete in any market, but the thing is, the expense, a radio station, the electric bill is at least $1 million. Music rights, $1 million a year. Jeez, so you've got all these. It's just very expensive, where on the internet, you can do anything. Plus, you got to remember that when we were in Chicago, we all went to school, we all graduated, and then we all moved to different areas of the United States. And it's great to have these Kev heads. I'm talking to folks in California, Florida, that were in Chicago, but they've been transplanted all around North America, all around the globe. And here's a chance to talk to them.
We're talking with Kevin Matthews, longtime Chicago radio legend here in town. He has written his memoir, Broken Mary, A Journey of Hope. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll talk a little bit about the personal notes in this book about being diagnosed with MS, your relationships growing up, and religion, which plays a big part in this book. Kevin Matthews, my guest tonight at the big table. Stay with us. Not looking good for the Chicago Bears tonight. It's only preseason, so I wouldn't get too worked up, but we're watching kind of out of the corner of our eye, and it is gaffe after gaffe after gaffe. Here's our Bears correspondent, Pete Zimmerman.
Yes, Justin, that is correct. It is gaffe after gaffe after gaffe. 20-0 Broncos with a little bit more than 20 seconds left on the clock in
Jed
the first
Hoyer
half.
Trying to bring us back the cozy, fresh memories of Shane Matthews with his performance tonight.
Jed Hoyer?
Or is it not Jed Hoyer? Sorry, Brian Hoyer.
Brian Hoyer.
He's looking terrible. He's throwing picks. He's getting sacked. The Bears' offensive line looks in disarray. I'm telling you, man.
Shane Matthews is probably somewhere thinking, "What? Who's bringing me up?
Who's brought my name up?" I don't know. I mean, the first team didn't look much better. Jay Cutler was sacked. There seemed to be some confusion at the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You know, I know it's early.
T- touchdown, block punt and a touchdown by the Broncos. So, yeah. You know, the special teams pretty much staying right where they were last year. Terrible.
Yeah.
Wait, I'm not, you know.
I know. It's only the first half preseason game.
Taking it down to 11-5.
That's right.
13-3.
You know, and it's, again, they're already probably at third stringers right now. So I wouldn't get too bent out of shape. I do love that the studio, I've talked about this a lot, but the studio televisions are pretty small. They're nice, and there's a lot of them. But this this screen that's right in front of me is so small, it cuts off the down and distance or the score at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't tell what's happening in the game. So all I know is that right now they're showing it's 3rd and 4, but during the game I'm like, so maybe in a weird way they're getting the preseason sort of kinks worked out on the broadcast as well.
Could be. And then, I don't. First game, and as you mentioned earlier, it's against the Super Bowl champions, right? They won last year, right? Yeah, Peyton Manning. So I'm not going to get too, again, I know like we in Chicago sports fans have a tendency to go crazy. You know, what will be all the sports radio tomorrow and the columnists, but, oh, this is going to be terrible. Offense looked in disarray. They shouldn't have cut Matt Slauson and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I know. It's only the first quarter, first half of the first preseason game. Like, we can't get upset and jump out of windows till at least the third preseason game.
Let's find a couple of good things if there are any.
Right now, it doesn't seem like there are any. The running game was pretty bad. The offensive line was bad. I don't know if Cutler even completed a pass. The defense probably looked okay. Mm-hmm. They had an interception in there, but they also gave up a pretty long drive and they were off the field for the third, so there's not much to evaluate there. A couple of injuries, and just now, which is kind of a bummer, is the Denver Broncos, with about 30 seconds to go and the second team unit in there, was able to make a couple plays and get into field goal range to, essentially, it doesn't really matter, score doesn't matter, but the idea that they're going to give up points at the end when they shouldn't have, it's very deflating as a Bears fan.
Well, I hope this is going to be one of the games like I mentioned earlier where, you know, Fails comes in the second half and the Bears win 32-20. And we'll wake up.
It's going to be 32-23 because they're going to hit this field goal here. Oh, no, blocked.
They blocked it.
Good job. Okay, so... he's going to bring it back? Nope. So coming up, we'll continue our conversation with Kevin Matthews. We also will have Raven Lane in studio. She's an R&B singer from the south side of Chicago. 17 years old. Still, I'm not sure if she just graduated or if she's coming back for her senior year of high school.
She's in high school, yeah.
Unbelievable. Tremendous album put out, Moon Shoes. It was an EP last year that turned into a full length now, based on the success that she had off of that EP. So we'll talk with her coming up at 9 o'clock. Also in the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to be fan jamming the Olympics with Molly Green. She'll be back to tell us. That's one thing with this Bears game and the Cubs game. We're forgetting that there is primetime Olympics tonight, including swimming and volleyball. It seems like all the things they put in primetime and swimming and volleyball. Beach volleyball. Anyway, that indoor stuff, that goes during the day. You got to throw that to the day. So that's good. And then at 10 o'clock, Greg Flam's going to be here. Greg's going to do swap meet, 312-981-7200. Very excited to have Greg here where he evaluates Chicago memorabilia. We've been having some great fun with him and the Download Nation as you guys tell us what you have in your junk pile, in your garage, what you're holding on to, what's your keepsake, and we tell you if it's worth anything. It's a pretty easy concept, right? As we said with Jeff Bridges, easy, simple concept, complex plot. My guest at the big table tonight, Kevin Matthews. The longtime radio host who, I mean, growing up, I think the reason that I had any interest in radio whatsoever was because of Kevin Matthews listening. I can just picture it driving to my grocery store job, listening to Kevin Matthews every morning on AM 1000. He's my guest tonight. He's written a new memoir, Broken Mary, A Journey of Hope. One of the big parts of writing this book, Kevin, has to do with your diagnosis. In 2008, you were diagnosed with MS. Lead us up to that moment. You actually had a moment in the studio that grabbed your attention. Right. Yeah.
Well, in 2008, yeah, I just couldn't move one morning. I literally thought I was having a stroke. And doctors eventually thought it was a brain tumor. That's a wake-up call when a doctor says, this very likely could be a brain tumor. Where it's located, we can't operate. There's nothing we can do. Go home and get ready to die, basically. And it turns out I was diagnosed with a rare form of MS, and it's a wake-up call.
There's the call right now.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that experience, because you talk about it in the book, but about that feeling, about embracing not only, you know, the diagnosis, but the fear, being scared about what's next.
Well, you know what? That's what's interesting. One reason I wrote this book, I wasn't afraid. I've always believed in God. I wasn't afraid to die. I've always kind of looked forward to just getting off Earth and let's go up into heaven. I mean, the book starts when I'm 4 years old. I lived in a very violent house in a violent neighborhood, and I basically prayed to die. And this big new thing, I was four, and I heard, hey, there's this guy named Jesus, and he'll protect you. So I've always had a big brother in this, as far as my spirituality goes.
How has it evolved for you, obviously, with the diagnosis and, you know, being able to not, it's not a brain tumor, but at the same time, to have diagnosis like MS, how has your approach to religion, your spirituality evolved since that diagnosis?
I was led to a dumpster. God sent me to a dumpster, and what I found, this statue of the Virgin Mary in the trash laying next to the dumpster, she's broken in half, she's missing her hands, you know, she's about 4 feet tall, and I couldn't leave that statue there. And the book talks about what has happened since I took that statue, put it together. We're all broken. She represented me and society. Every person listening, we're all broken. And that's how come I call this Broken Mary. And this statue has literally touched people's lives around the world, what's happened in the last 6 years. I mean, from getting acknowledgement from the Vatican or Fatima. You can go to brokenmary.com. We have an app on Apple. You can download I Say the Rosary. And the app is being downloaded in Asia, in the Middle East, all over the world. And it's the power of prayer.
You're in a position, you know, as someone who has touched so many lives and you know, has heard so many stories from your Kev heads, from people around you, from being on the radio in a place where people, you're taking calls and talking to different people. When Kevin Matthews says we're all broken in some way, there's some truth to that, because you've actually been in that seat. You've felt that.
And not only are we, I just take a look at the news. Everybody is starving for spirituality. And it's right in front of us. We're at this banquet table, yet we eat nothing. We're starving for spirituality. And I can prove with this book that there is a God, that no matter if you've got MS or cancer or addictions, you've just come out of prison, you can relate to this book. And that's what is humbling, is how many people are writing and they can relate. Mm-hmm. Thank you. You know, it's not about me. It's the message. That's all. It's the message. And the power of Mary, the mother of Christ, is amazing. And you'll see how she is literally wants us to pray. And it's an amazing journey with what's happened in the last 4 years.
You know, I mean, you obviously have had life-changing events. Spirituality has become such a big focus of your work and what you're doing. You know, to think back 20 years ago when you're in the midst of a lineup that includes, you know, I mean, even more than 20 years now, but with everybody, spirituality didn't play a big role in what you guys were doing at AM 1000.
Actually, we were doing. That's how Devon, a character I invented, Devon, he basically is a black space alien who loves Jesus. And if you go back and listen to Devon, that's the only way I could really talk about Jesus on the air. So I just invented Devon.
Let's say you were spiritual at that point. If you, you know, are having the same sort of moments you're having now, do you think it'd be tough to talk about spirituality on the air in a way that's so mainstream?
No, it's all about content. It's how you deliver it. But I can deliver it easily. I did it using Devon. I also just submerged myself in spirituality of our Native Americans. I've worked with, you know, the Lakota or the Hopi, the Dene, the Iroquois. They played a huge part in my life, too.
Kevin, is there any part of you that misses being on the radio?
I miss, because, you know, people still listen to radio, and I miss Chicago. Unfortunately, because of the MS, I physically can't. I can't stand or I can't walk. I can't run. But I do miss the audience. I want everybody to know that's listening, I love you. One of the things that I really want to do is I would love to get into the Radio Hall of Fame. Not for me, so I could get on stage and honestly say to everyone, I want to thank the audience. I want the audience and myself to be in the Radio Hall of Fame because we did this all together.
For kids who might be listening now who are making choices about how they want to get into careers in entertainment, whether it be acting or writing or broadcasting in that regard, what do you tell them? I mean, are there enough places in radio and terrestrial radio in the world that's created now for young voices and for new voices to try some new things and the theater of the mind in that space?
Yes, and never give up. You know, I've got great kids. My son's on tour. He's just toured with Brian Ferry, and, you know, I mean, he worked hard. Or my daughter, she's got three kids. I never told my kids they could do anything they want. I never told my son to turn his guitar down. Be honest. Don't be around people that say no a lot. Be around people that stimulate you creatively. Read. Watch. Be different, you know. If you love rock and roll, then you should also check out what's happening in jazz and soul. There's so much out there. It's just look at it differently.
The author of the book Broken Mary, A Journey of Hope, Kevin Matthews, longtime radio legend. I would love to be the person who helps you get into the Radio Hall of Fame because you deserve to be there. Such great times here in Chicago. Kevin, congrats on the books, and thanks so much for talking to us tonight here on The Download.
Hey, I appreciate it. And you can get it at Amazon.com. And it's a great message. Everybody can relate to it. Again, it's not about me. It's the message. And when I say that about the Radio Hall of Fame, I truly mean it. I want to say thank you to you, the audience, from that stage.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. This Saturday night, stand-up comedian Ian Abramson is coming to the Virgin Hotel for a show sponsored by the AV Club. You may know Ian from his stage work, but also from his digital web series 7 Minutes in Purgatory, which can be found at ComedyCentral.com. The premise? Stand-ups get into a soundproof booth, which is really just the back of a truck. In the back of the truck is a video camera with no audience. The comic spends 7 minutes doing his or her act. The audience watches them in a theater on a screen. The results are hilariously awkward. Abramson is currently living in Los Angeles, but before that, he was a mainstay here in Chicago as part of the alternative comedy scene, and he joins me now. Ian, thanks for taking some time out. We appreciate it.
Thanks for talking to me.
All right.
How's everybody listening doing?
I can't speak for all of them.
Okay.
I think they're doing well. You came to Chicago. You grew up in California, but you came to Chicago to train to be a comedian. What does that mean?
It means that I wanted to go to what I think is the best city to learn how to become a comedian, and that's Chicago. So I moved out here and dabbled in improv, took to stand up a little more, and thought, all right, I'm gonna throw myself full force into this.
At the time, were you thinking, when you came to Chicago, were you thinking about more of an improv sketch comedy career as opposed to stand-up, or were you a stand-up that was just looking to strengthen your skills?
You know, I really didn't know. I took some classes to kind of see how I would feel about it, and I was doing a little bit of stand-up, and then just slowly but surely realized, oh, okay, I think I prefer to do stand-up.
Being a California kid, what did you know about Chicago when before you came here? What was your thought about moving to the Midwest?
So the thing is when you're growing up in California, the snow is just a novelty. I grew up in a town called Moreno Valley, which means Brown Valley, all right? We were lucky when it was wet. So if you wanted to see the snow, it was like a family trip. It was like going to a theme park or something. You went to the snow. So to then live in the snow when it was like not just something for fun, it was something that affected the way you got to work. That was a whole new ballgame.
Learning comedy and coming here to train and dabble in improv and strengthen your skills as a stand-up, Chicago Magazine called you the best experimental comic in Chicago. You were 16 comics to watch. You've had all these kind of things. At what point did you feel like you started to identify your voice?
Ooh, you know, I feel like when you're doing comedy, you're trying to just be the best version of the comedian you are. And I think the goal is to kind of peel back the layers and figure out what that means for every different comedian, you know? There's not a point where you write a joke and you're like, finally, my voice, you know? Instead, it's just like you kind of slowly realize what works and what doesn't work, and it all kind of adds up, hopefully, to being a comedian that you feel good about.
Yeah, but I mean, you're someone who is less of a traditional stand-up who's going to get on, you know, Thursday night at Zany's and do your 10-minute act and talk about observations in the world. You're much more of an environmental comic or something like with 7 minutes, coming up with ideas that are funny and executing those ideas.
Yeah, I think it's really just kind of what I was interested in doing. I don't know why I like one food over another food, you know, but that's just kind of the way it is.
When you were in Chicago doing an act that was a little bit less conventional, where is that accepted? Where are the places to go in Chicago to do something that's a little bit off the beaten path, that's not your standard stand-up fare?
The really great thing about Chicago is that there are a lot of rooms that do encourage that. There is Cole's Open Mic every Wednesday in Logan Square is a place that I absolutely tried out a bunch of material, and they were open to weird stuff. But then also there are places like Zany's and the Laugh Factory and these places that let you get up in front of a more traditional audience. And I think that's what I love about Chicago, is that after I try out some weirder stuff in front of people that are like, yeah, I want to see some weird comedy, then I can also try it out in front of people that might be like, wait, what is this? And right. If I can get them on board, if I can get them to laugh, then it's probably you know, an okay joke.
Yeah, and let's make a transition to 7 minutes. I mean, 7 minutes in Purgatory, it's really been a show that you've done that transitions into a web series that you do for Comedy Central. Explain the roots and the backstory to coming up with this concept.
Yeah, you know, I produced the show with Matt Byrne, who also produces a show I'm doing on Saturday at the Virgin, actually. But we were just sitting down, and I thought, you know, there's kind of a relationship between a performer and the audience, and it's interesting to me that the audience is responding to the performer, and the performer is also responding to the audience, and I wanted to see what would happen if that couldn't be the case. And so we said, okay, how do we build the show around that? Well, they'll have to be in a different room. What if they perform to a camera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's been really cool to get to kind of grow the show out with that in mind.
Yeah, as the host of that show, and you've been in the booth and you've done it, and obviously you're used to it now, but as when you were first trying this idea out and being the comic that was actually in the booth, talk about that experience of performing to nobody, just performing to a camera, knowing that an audience is watching it.
It is every single time way more strange than I expect it to be. It never stops getting weird to me. It feels like you're talking to the mirror, you know, but then there's also a layer of being, you're completely aware that everything that you're saying is being heard right then. So I will often mid-sentence just start laughing, because that's such a weird feeling. And then it'll make me trip over my words in a way that I kind of think is fun, but it's just something I wasn't expecting.
Well, I mean, it's different than, say, you know, even radio or television that doesn't have an audience, like sitcoms that don't have in-studio audiences. It's different in the sense that, yes, there are no there's no editing process. There's no casual conversation with an audience. This is, they're hearing it right in that moment, and you know that as a comic.
Right, yeah. With radio, it's supposed to be that. You know, you're supposed to have exactly that experience where the people are listening in their cars or at home or whatever. But with stand-up, the audience is supposed to hear it right then. That's what stand-up is.
I think it's great. I think it's great comedy to watch the interaction, obviously, without that audience there. But it's also this great social experiment about how performances really, you know, they thrive when an audience has that interaction.
Yeah, absolutely.
As somebody who's done this now for a couple of years, do you continue to be marveled by it? Do you continue to sort of see comics go in there and maybe try something different or do something different that blows your mind as someone who put this together?
It's always fun to see people do it for the first time. It's fun to see the different ways that people will take chances and try to try a different bit out, you know. So it's always exciting for me.
For you, being in in Los Angeles, you know, wanting to get into the business, having this opportunity on Comedy Central, it's interesting because experimental comedy has seen a growth in the last couple of years, whether it be Adult Swim or what Comedy Central does, even on the website or on the Nathan For You type stuff and that they put on their roster. Do you feel like Hollywood is open to ideas like 7 Minutes in Purgatory or other ideas that you, Ian Abramson, bring to them that are a little different than the mainstream showcases that have been done before?
I hope so. You know, I mean, I can't control what people respond to, but I can try to make things that I think are interesting and fun. And if people respond well to them, then hey, you know, I've been lucky enough to get 7 Minutes in Purgatory to be a digital show for Comedy Central, and I'm thrilled about it, you know?
Is there a hesitancy or the idea that, you know, you could bend or compromise some of the material to be a little bit more palatable for a sitcom audience and things of that nature? But as somebody who has had success with 7 Minutes and continues to thrive in this role, in this realm of experimental comedy, that's not an option, is it?
No, I mean, I think it's like I said, I can only be the comedian that I am. You know, if that was the type of comedy that I was good at, that would be the type of comedy I would be doing.
Right.
So I have to play my strengths and try to figure out what I can bring to the table and hopefully make people laugh with. So I just try to make that, my goal is to make that good and understandable enough and let that hopefully work in front of those other audiences.
Stand-up comedian Ian Abramson is going to be at the Virgin Hotel for a show sponsored by the AV Club. That's coming up Saturday night. You can check out 7 Minutes in Purgatory, which can be found on ComedyCentral.com. Ian, thanks for taking a couple minutes out to talk to us tonight. We appreciate it.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you for having me.
For those keeping score, and I don't know why you would, the Chicago Bears are down 22-0 after a safety. I thought this was David Fales' moment. I really did. I thought, just like you, Pete, I thought he was going to take us back.
Safety.
Instead, he looks more out of sorts than the guys before him.
Yeesh.
John Fox had that look on his face like, oh, this is harder when I don't have talent. Oh, right. That's what I forgot. It's just the first preseason game. But you know what? It's the unfortunate thing about it is, it's all too real when you've just been a Chicago Bears fan for the last 6 years or even, you know, in the last 4 years and you saw Mark Trestman and you just saw essentially, even the beginning of this last year, essentially really disrespectful football. You know, the kind of thing where you're like, you're not even in this game. You let the Patriots put 50 points on you. You let the Packers shut you. You know, like everything about it was just disrespectful to the fans. And that's what we hope to get from John Fox. This is one of those games. Now, again, I'm not complaining in the way that I'm like, I can't believe this team. We're not getting all talk radio or sports talk here. It's only one preseason game. But it also is like, yeesh, you know, when you see that kind of stuff, it just makes you go, I don't know, man.
Yeah, you would hope for, you know, you don't need a win or anything. You just hope for a better.
A first down would be okay.
Yes. Yeah. It is disappointing.
Yeah. That was a cool interview with Ian Abramson. 7 Minutes in Purgatory. You got to watch that on ComedyCentral.com. It's such a great concept.
It really is.
Comics going into a soundproof booth to do their act while an audience watches him on closed circuit. That's so good. That's a good bit. I like that. And you know, I hope that he, because he's done some great stuff and he has a lot of ideas like that. And I hope that there is a space for him and that kind of experimental comedy. Because I love what Comedy Central is doing right now, whether it be Nathan For You or Andy Daly's show, Rewind. Or, not Rewind.
Review.
Review. Sorry about that. I don't know why I just had a total brain fart right there. But the yeah, I love that show. I love Review. You know, that kind of stuff. If I hope more Adult Swim and opportunities come to people like Ian Abramson who can do fun things that kind of push the envelope. We need more of that to sort of balance out mainstream TV. And I saw a stat not too long ago that was really tremendous in that regard, that there's like 400-some-odd shows now instead of like the usual 150. So hopefully they can get a shot. So there you go. All right, coming up, we're going to talk with Raven Lene. She's a R&B singer. She just put out her album Moon Shoes. Really great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Her music is really tremendous. We'll talk with her about her career. You know, she's long in the tooth. That's the only thing against her, as I'm not sure that, you know, with her age, you know, that just being around as long as she has, that, you know, people are going to just, you know, she's such a late bloomer. I mean, she's 17.
I know.
It's just like, eh, you know, if you would have started when you were 7, like everybody else does. I joke. I kid, of course. Raven Lene coming up here on the download. Also coming up, we'll fan jam the Olympics. Now that this Bears game is not worth watching anymore, we can switch to the more important things, swimming and beach volleyball, and then a little bit of swimming, then a repeat of gymnastics, and then some more swimming and some beach volleyball. That just seems to be what the Olympics have sort of become. It's Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, we're going to talk with Molly Green. She's fan jamming the Olympics tonight. She's watching the primetime events, so we don't have to. She's going to tell us all about it. It's swimming, beach volleyball, swimming and beach volleyball. It seems to be what they do every night. But we'll have Molly on coming up later in the 9 o'clock hour. And Greg Flam's going to be here in the 10 o'clock hour. And that's where we're going to play Swap Meet. This is where you call up and with your Chicago memorabilia, and we tell you if it's worth anything. So that wristband that you took off a Chicago Bear after that preseason game, we'll tell you if it's worth. It's probably not worth anything if you're at the game tonight, but it may be worth something. You never know. Well, my next guest is blowing up right now. She's a Chicago R&B soul singer that at the ripe old age of 17 is turning heads. Here's the music of Raven Lene.
In a room full of all the hope and take disguise. The eyes you think you shake your thighs in a room full of all the hope and take disguise.
That's the track Free Room off the album Moon Shoes. Raven Lene is getting great reviews for that album, which was put out late last month. It's an updated version of the EP of the same name that was put out last year. Lene is quite a singer, and people are taking notice. She was a breakout artist at WGCI. She was named one of the voices to watch at the BBC. She's also started playing festivals. Raven Lene is not moving to Hollywood or taking on New York City just yet,
The Southside native is getting ready for her senior year in high school. Raven is just 17 years old. She's going to be playing at the after party for the North Coast Festival on September 3rd at the Bottom Lounge over there on Lake Street with Joey Perp and Saba. And it's my pleasure to welcome Raven Lene in studio. Good to see you. Nice to meet you.
You too. It's good to be here.
So let's talk about your music. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously you had success by putting the EP out last year. Mm-hmm. What was the impetus for creating a longer version, an album of the same name?
I honestly think that when you put your soul into a piece of work, you want as much love for it as you can possibly get. So I felt that it was necessary to kind of revamp it and do it again with a more, I guess, official stamp on it. So this time it's on a broader stream where more people can mm-hmm. like it or buy it. So it's just in a bigger platform this time around. And I feel like it was a really good thing to do because more people from different countries and just different areas are more in tune with who I am and the music I make.
Well, let's talk about who you are and the music you make. I read somewhere that you started making music and thinking about being a singer in middle school. Mm-hmm. I've had so many. Who had Jeff Bridges on tonight? Jeff Bridges, who's been an actor his first role, he was one.
Wow.
In 1951. That's a question I would ask to him, but you're 17 years old. When I say middle school, that's only a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. What got you into music?
I was always interested in writing and the way words are used or just the way you can communicate verbally or musically. And I wasn't really good at anything else. So I joined the choir in middle school and I really liked it. I found myself singing around the house all the time. I was taking voice lessons as well as piano and guitar lessons. And it dawned on me that I don't feel this way doing anything else, and this is what I want to do. So from there, I decided to take it seriously and go to an art school, Chicago High School for the Arts,
yep.
where I've been studying classical music and just getting more in tune with being an artist and intertwining that with my personal life and just teenage emotions and everything that goes into that. So,
well, I mean, how does that help you to be studying classical music, to be able to perform the music you perform, which is a mixture of R&B and mm-hmm. soul, pop music, a little bit of funk?
Mm-hmm.
How does learning about classical music help you?
I will say it has been the biggest help because the classical training is more, it's exercise, literally. You're exercising the muscles and getting in tune with how to sing. A lot of people can sing, but singing properly mm-hmm. is key when you want to do this forever. So a lot of people shock their voices and they can't sing anymore because they don't know how to properly take care of it or to eat the right things or just train properly. So I think that my teachers and the school have helped me a lot in that aspect, as well as being more creative. Like, we learned about Beethoven, Bach, Baroque, everybody. So it's just more exposure in that way that I feel like a lot of kids my age from the South Side don't get. So I'm very grateful for that.
Well, we'll talk about your upbringing and living coming from the South Side. Mm-hmm. I'm interested, you know, your teachers, are they familiar with the idea of you sort of wanting a career out of this, that you're having success in mm-hmm. music? Are they helping you along the way? Or is it strictly, we're going to teach you classical music, whatever you do after 5 o'clock, that's your business?
My teachers are actually very supportive. They want to see you take what we give you and go out in the world and do something with it. So they're happy. They're very happy. They're actually not strict in that way, whereas we only do classical, nothing else. They're very open to other types of music or just being involved in their students' lives outside of school. So
for you, do you notice a change in your music, even the stuff from the Moon Shoes EP to what you're doing with the new stuff that you added to the EP mm-hmm. as you develop at a rate when you're in high school and each year you're accelerating? You even talked the way you talked about taking care of your voice.
Mm-hmm.
Can you notice a change? Do you notice your music evolving from year to year?
You know, it's funny. This morning I said to myself, I can't connect with the stuff I wrote 2 months ago or even a year ago because I'm not there anymore. And a lot of people want me to sing these old songs.
Yeah,
I'm just like, I'm not there. Like, I'm not in that place anymore. I was there then, and I listen to it now like,
that's interesting. And that's something as a professional musician, think mm-hmm. about it. I mean, mm-hmm. there will be people in your career when, you know, in 5 years, they'll be
exactly.
asking for the stuff off of Moon Shoes.
Exactly.
You know, I've had musicians in here who say that, it's not a, you know, when I'll ask him, you know, like for maybe something that, that is a emotional piece or something mm-hmm. that goes about breakups or painful or something I don't want to sing about anymore. But at the same time, they recognize that that is, it's not going back to that place. It's almost just honoring that time.
Exactly.
So how are you going to deal with that? You know, you have to figure out how to deal with that, especially when you're accelerating at such a fast rate.
And I think of, I thought of it like this. I feel like what I said was selfish. I was going to tweet it, actually, and I said that's kind of selfish because just because I lived it 2 months ago, someone might be living it right now.
Right.
And they might need to hear what I have to say. So I decided not to be a selfish brat and just suck it up and sing those songs, you know?
Raven Lenae is my guest in studio tonight. Her album is Moon Shoes. She's going to be playing the after party at the North Coast Music Festival, which is on September 3rd at the Bottom Lounge with Joey Purp and Saba, both gentlemen who've been on this program. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll continue our conversation with Raven Lenae. Stay with us.
I think we should laugh now. I don't want them thinking that we do not know how to smile. I think this is happy. Let's chill on the trees and pretend we're enjoying the breeze. The breeze. Let's put on our moon shoes.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. That's the title track off the album Moon Shoes. Raven Lenae in studio with us tonight. 17-year-old R&B, soul, pop, funk singer from Chicago Southside. She's got a show at the an after party show for the North Coast Music Festival September 3rd at Bottom Lounge. Joey Purp, Saba. You know, I'll go right to the texters. Scott wants to know whose music and performers have influenced you the most. The texters are responding to your music because it's beautiful music, and it's really, really, and it's amazing. I think a lot of people are really engaged because you are such a young artist and you're from Chicago, and they want to know more about you. So tell me a little bit about the artists that influence you in this day and age.
I will say I'm basically a fusion of everything that I've listened to in the past whole life. So, but I will say that the main artists that stuck out to me growing up were NDRE, Erykah Badu. I'm a huge fan of Eartha Kitt.
Eartha Kitt, really?
Yeah, huge. And
I mean, I would say, you know, Erykah Badu and company, but Eartha Kitt is a couple generations before you.
Yeah.
What about Eartha Kitt? Resonates with you?
I literally sit in bed all day and watch her videos, the way she interacts with the camera and just her tone. It's just very beautiful and very timeless to me. So it's very, I learn from her every day. I can watch the same video for
And it's a performance.
Week.
I mean, she's such Broadway musical great. Right?
It's amazing.
Yeah.
She's an actress.
How much of, for you, I mean, obviously the music, you're evolving as a musician. How much do you have to think about the performance aspect? You know, as you start to do shows, like I'm going to do a show here, how much you have to think about your stage presence?
When I first started performing, I used to think about it all the time. Like, I hope I sound like this, or I hope I look like this. But after a while, it's like, it's live music for a reason. It's supposed to be spontaneous and on the spot. So I try not to think about it too hard. And people tend to like my performances, so I think it's cool. But I actually enjoy performing more than recording, because you get to deliver the message in a more intimate way, where you see the people singing the words, and it's just very emotional for me and moving. I think it does something more for me than it does for them.
You've had such success. I mean, like I said, people calling out everything from winning the GCI contest to so many different blogs and Pitchfork, everything in between talking about your music. But you are going into your senior year of high school. How do you balance? I know your mom's here tonight with you, but how do you balance the desire to want to accelerate your music career, get on stage whenever you can, play music in Chicago, and sort of, you know, continue your schooling and be a senior in high school?
I think it's all about prioritizing and balancing. It's definitely one of our core values at Shy Arts is balance, because, and I won that too, because it's really hard. Even if I wasn't a musician outside of school, it's hard just being a student and being my age. So a lot of the time you just have to get stuff done when you can, go to sleep on time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that kind of thing. Or just have a good relationship with your teacher so they know what's going on. They know that you're going to get it in on time, but you just need a little extension. So it's all about communication and just being a reliable student and a very, I don't know.
In most of your bios that are written up for websites or for, they talk about you being a Southside singer, coming from Chicago Southside. There's a couple that says coming from the almost like the mean streets of the Southside. There almost is a way that they're marketing the idea that you're from the Southside. Yeah. Are you comfortable with that? I mean, is that something that, you know, because a lot of it is the negative connotation that this beautiful voice has come from such a rough and tumble place.
Exactly.
But how do you feel about that?
I actually had a rant the other day with my mom. She wasn't really lit. She was like, okay, but I don't feel like those, me as an artist and where I'm from, go together. I feel like I sleep there, but it doesn't have anything to do with me as a person, or, you know, I don't like those being paired together. Like I'm dodging bullets every day,
right.
Or I can't go outside.
Right.
It's not like that at all. And I don't really appreciate when people make, I understand they don't understand, but at the same time, you have to be more sensitive when, you know, approaching that subject or even assuming things like that. But I will say, I love the city I'm from and I will never take away from that, but I just rather be separated from, you know, that kind of idea.
I'll ask you the question. You know, what is it about Chicago that inspires you as an artist? What is it about being a Chicago kid, being from the South Side, that you know, makes you the kind of person that creates the music you create?
I think from the start, Chicago has had a huge music scene, and everyone are closely knit together. And I don't know, I just feel like it's a great place for you to thrive or to just live out your dreams, because everything's fat. I was in LA the other day, a couple weeks ago.
Sure, like any 17-year-old.
And I was walking down the street and I felt like I was walking so fast because everyone around me was just very, you know, have you ever been to LA? It's very casual and laid back. And I felt like I could never live here because I would get super lazy. So I feel like Chicago is a place where you stay on your toes, and I don't know, everyone around you is just doing stuff. Everyone's walking fast, everything's just fast, and I like it because it keeps me on top of my game. So,
well, I mean, you're obviously a rising star in the music scene here in Chicago, and that music scene has blown up in the last 2-3 years. We have all the artists that come through here. I mean, it really is almost a gold rush of musicians and really talented artists, all the way from Chance the Rapper to the Saba and Joey Purp, who you're going to be with, Donnie Trumpet, Erica Allen Kane, like others who are in this town that are doing things and putting Chicago on the map. Do you feel like you're part of that scene at 17 years old? Do you feel like you're part of the names that I just mentioned?
I definitely feel like I'm, because I find myself in the loop all the time. Like every show I do, I see them, and it's just weird because these other people I saw blowing up when I just started, and I'm like, I hope I'm there one day, and I'm here. It's just super weird. It's really weird. And I just feel like if this can happen in a year or so, what's going to happen next year or the year after that, you know?
You know, you go to the art school in Chicago, which is a great opportunity to be able to do the arts. A lot of people don't have that opportunity at their school. Doesn't matter what side of town you're from, the arts program just may not, it may be a science school, it might be something else. How important is it for you and your career to be at a school that has a discipline, that has that its thing is it's an art school?
I don't think I would fit in a normal high. Like every time I think about it, and I have friends who go to normal high schools, I'm just like, what did you do all day? Like, you know, and people people ask me, like, is Shy Arts like High School Musical or Camp Rock? And it's nothing like that. But in a way it is, because everyone has that liberty to be free and who they are and sing in the hallways if they want to. It's just a more open space for people to develop as artists and as people in general. So I think it's more of a safe haven than a high school, you know, compared to other schools. So I think I fit in here more than anywhere else.
So what, I mean, here, you're going into your senior year, so it's time to start thinking about what your next step is. I mean, obviously college is an opportunity, but you have a career where music is taking off for you. Do you think about what's next? Are you thinking about college or just what's around the bend?
I honestly don't know where I'm going to be at the end of the year, so I don't like to, you know, say things like I'm going to go to college or I'm not going to go to college. But right now, the plan is for me to pursue music, and that will be my number one thing. If that's if that changes within the year, which I don't think it will, then I'll probably go to school.
What could be the? I mean, you could go on a scholarship,
you right? Know, you know, that school is always there. You know,
you know, I'm not involved in your life. You know, whatever you want to do, your mom is behind you. She'll be the
she
one.
Lied. Yeah.
Raven Lane is a R&B, soul, pop, funk singer in Chicago. Her record Moonshine is out. She or Moonshine, sorry, Moonshoes.
It could shine.
It could shine. It shines. Moonshoes shine. It was an EP that now a full-length album. She's going to be performing at the after party for the North Coast Music Festival on September 3rd at the Bottom Lounge with Saba and Joey Purp. Thanks for coming in. Nice
Thank
to
you
meet
for
you.
Having
and
me.
Continued success with your career.
Thank you.
Oh, that was fun. Again, we go back to Pete and I both shake our heads like what we were doing at 17. I was working at the grocery store being like, I wonder if I could maybe we'll go to college, see what I'll do.
I know. I was finally wrapping my head around, you know, the Donnie Trumpets, the 22-year-olds. Now we have to go down a few years
and it's
to
true.
Feel
if
bad
you,
about
if you
yourself.
Go to her SoundCloud page, which is Raven Lene, RavynLenae. Her tracks, they're like 250,000 clicks. You know, it's the kind of thing where you're like, huh. And people are, a lot of kids listening to this. Oh, Pete loves the traditional. I keep waiting for it to pop into something bigger, a remix, but no dice. All right, the Olympics are happening right now. The pool is big and blue. That's all the analysis I have tonight. That's why we turn to Molly Green. Molly is fan jamming the Olympics tonight. She's watching because we couldn't, but we want to know what's going on. Molly Green, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Hey, Justin.
All right. Tell me a little bit about what the overall tone is. I mean, this is going to be the most blind fan jam. I have not watched a single part
yeah,
of the Olympics.
I was wondering
tonight.
What you were aware of that happened tonight.
The Bears are getting their butt kicked. Oh. That's all I can tell you.
What about the I haven't checked
the,
in on
the
that.
The Cubs and the Cards are tied at 3 in the 8th.
All right.
I can give you other stuff.
I'm pumped up because I saw it was. I think it was my favorite moment so far. The Olympics just happened.
All right. So what? All right. Let's get right to it. What was the favorite moment of the Olympics so far?
So Simone Manuel from the U.S. just won a gold. She was not favored at all. It was there's these two sisters from Australia, the Campbell sisters.
Yes, I know.
They
them,
were
yeah.
way favored.
Are they mean? Those they sound like they'd be mean. The Campbell sisters from Australia. Like they're like the bad guys in a 80s camp movie.
They seem sweet, but I'm just a little tired of like the expected people winning things. So this was really thrilling, and she is the first African American woman to ever win a gold medal in a single swimming event.
All right,
and it was just really. It was really thrilling, unexpected, and came down to the end. She actually tied for gold with a Canadian, but
if they tie, they both get the gold medal.
Yeah, because it's to the hundredth of a second.
Wow, so that's a tie.
The wall at the same time, yeah. But the cake.
Uh oh.
You could tell that they weren't like have like this countdown clock, but they keep changing the time of it because it keeps changing. But NBC is really committed to this being like only 30 minute turnaround, but they keep adding time because it keeps getting pushed back. So they're really focused on that. And then this kind of came out of nowhere.
So this was kind of like we'll get to the other stuff. We'll show you this, but we got other stuff to do. Oh, this turned out. Okay.
But, anyway, so I'm pumped up from that.
Moment. All right, so that's good. All right, pumped up. We'll take it. So tonight, swimming, of course, takes the center stage for now. Michael Phelps raced. Tell us a little bit about Michael Phelps tonight.
So he won the 200 individual medley. He beat Ryan Lochte. Ryan Lochte came in fifth.
What?
And
are you sad?
Well, I was rooting for Ryan Lochte. Lochte. I was rooting for Ryan Lochte and the Brazilian swimmer. I have Michael Phelps fatigue, I think.
It's so true. You know, I like the Brazilian. He was the one with the swagger.
Yeah, and the crowd was, you know, that would have been really fun. And Brian Lochte's, well, he said he might come back, so who knows, but potentially his last Olympic swim. His hair is a little bit more blue tonight, but it's kind of spotty blue, so it's like he's doing it himself in his dorm room. But he posted a picture of them eating spaghetti in, like sitting in hot tubs eating spaghetti earlier today.
Oh, gross. that's how you get Zika right there. Food in the hot tub in Brazil. You're not supposed to do that. Michael Phelps wins again. This is what makes him 22 medals?
This is 20.
Uh-oh. We lost it. What was it?
Tomorrow.
Okay.
Am I wrong?
No, you were just cut in and cut out. So,
oh, sorry.
But what did you say? You said this is 20. This is 22?
This is 21, okay. And it could be 22 tomorrow night. So he's looking at 22.
Okay. Well, at least he still has a little bit of, it looks to be a little bit of tears when they do the national anthem. He hasn't gotten sick of it after 21 times.
He was subdued after this win. It wasn't, I mean, he had like the number one finger up, but he didn't celebrate as much. He struggled to get out of the pool. As the younger swimmers around him were like hopping out.
Well, he seems to be very emotional right now on the stand.
Yeah, it felt different. Like it had more weight to it tonight. So
maybe he's having that realization that he only has one or two more races left and it's over.
Yeah, and they did a little piece.
You know what? We'll come back to Molly. There's something wrong with her phone, which is a bummer. But you know what we'll do? Maybe we'll just take the break a little bit early, and then we'll get Molly back on. Because I want to ask her about women's gymnastics and also talk to her a little bit about beach volleyball. I feel like it's swimming, beach volleyball, gymnastics. That's all that matters to the primetime Olympics. We're fan jamming the Olympics with Molly Green. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Stay with us. This one goes out to Simone! Michael Phelps, y'all! The American swimmers are on fire today. Michael Phelps wins gold. Also, Simone Manuel wins gold. The first African-American swimmer to win gold, to win a medal. Molly Green joins us again here. Fan Jam the Olympics. She watched tonight. So because we couldn't, there were a lot of things going on tonight. Molly, a big night for swimming, but it was also a big night for gymnastics. I don't know where we're at. Can we say who won and who lost, or are we still waiting for them to show that?
I made a mistake about Michael Phelps' gold. This was 22, so okay. He's looking at 23 tomorrow. Sorry.
Okay, no problem. Hey, you know what? It's from the corrections department.
Okay, sorry. It's a lot.
You get five. It really doesn't matter at this point, does it? I mean,
they've said a lot of 20-somethings tonight, and I just want to let you know too. The time clock has gone up another 10 minutes. So
what does that mean? So tell me a little bit. The question I asked was about women's gymnastics.
Yeah.
Have we seen that already?
Well, I know what happened because I just went on Google to look up something and I saw happened. So I'm just really frustrated that it's not on at night and that it's not live when it's on.
Are they going to show it at 10 o'clock or something? Are they trying
They showed half of it already.
Then they don't care about spoilers. They don't care. If they're showing half at 7 o'clock and then waiting till 10 o'clock, that is ridiculous when the event that everybody wants to know what happened to happened during the day.
And I just remember in past Olympics really being on like pins and needles, like who's, you know, watching every, not only the Americans, but the other countries too, because you want to see their scores to see how it compares. And it was always like so, you know, on the edge of your seat, exciting with the gymnastics. And I haven't felt any of that.
Oh, they ruined it. They ruined the Olympics.
They ruined it.
Bob Costas ruined the Olympics.
That's right.
Really,
Ryan Seacrest.
Ryan Seacrest throwing two Star Wars trailers. Simone, right now, a very emotional moment. She's crying with her coach. Makes me want to cry. She's when Michael Phelps cries, I'm like, okay, 22 medals. Knock it off with your teary-eyed. We know how mean your face is when you're, when you know, we don't know what you're listening to. But she's crying, and you can really feel it, and that's really great.
Yeah. And we won, like, Ryan Murphy won a gold tonight. There was quite a few swimming semifinals, and there's this guy, Anthony Irvin, who's 35, and he was in a semifinal. And I just remember him from past years. He's like sleeved with tattoos, and he took 8 years off from swimming, and that was like the big story 4 years ago, and came back to it. So he swam in 2012, and I guess he swam in like 2000, but nothing in between the two. So he was back tonight, so it was fun to see him. Missy Franklin swam again, and she didn't make it into her final, so her Olympics are done, and she was who was like the big female star of 4 years ago. So that's about it for the swimming.
Okay, so we don't really know. So what can you tell us about the first half of gymnastics? Did they at least cliffhang it? Did they just like? Like Biles is about to get on the balance beam, and they're like, "But wait, 3 hours." And
we'll Biles be back. Wasn't leading.
How's that even possible?
Because one of the Russian gymnasts is really good on, and so she went ahead of her with the uneven bars. But it looks like Simone Biles will probably do well in the second half.
What about some other sports? I mean, actually, let's go back to the broadcast moment. What do we got tonight? Was there any good broadcast moment? I know Ryan Seacrest has been all over this. But what would be your favorite broadcast moment from tonight's?
Well, I really like the McDonald's chicken nugget commercial they keep showing.
I have not seen it. What is it?
It has an Iron and Wine cover of Time After Time, the Cyndi Lauper song.
Okay.
And it's like a split screen between a kid in maybe like the 70s and a kid now. And there's a really cute part with a dog. But I don't know. I'm a vegetarian. I'm not a chicken McNugget lover. But something about that commercial
is making you want to go to the drive-thru.
Really, it chokes me up every time when I hear that song.
I have a
question. They've shown it a lot, though. They've shown it a lot.
Let me ask you a question about swimmers. As Michael Phelps gets ready to do the semifinal race, is it me? Does it seem like Michael Phelps' shorts are a different color than other Americans? Do they get to choose their one, or is it all like?
I was noticing that too. That like Ryan Lochte's had some like a design to it, and they were a different color.
That's bogus. They got to all wear the same uniform, right?
Yeah, but and the girls wear different suits, too. So I don't know how that.
Well, that's ridiculous.
How that works?
You know what?
Good answer, but it's right. You're true. I mean, it's true that they all wear different.
Sorry, but you know, Trump may be right here. In this country, with all of its different colored swimsuits. I don't know. We must be the laughing stock of the whole world right now. They're like, you can't even pick the one color. You don't wear the different color.
Well, is it that we have so much freedom that we're allowed to wear a difference?
Yeah, right. That we're showing off our freedom.
Is that what makes America great?
That's what makes America great. That we can show different. we can show our originality in how we swim. All right. Did they do beach volleyball tonight or no?
No. Well, because Kerry Walsh at Jennings wasn't in it, so that's the only time they showed at night.
Is that really? That's true. So what else do they show? Is that it? Gymnastics and swimming?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, there's been some thrilling moments, but there hasn't been much variety tonight. I know. I'm like, I wouldn't mind seeing like a highlight package from earlier in the day. You know,
turn it around, right?
I mean, I guess they do that. Maybe they do that later, like the Ryan Seacrest show. But
maybe I don't think they do. I've been up and I've seen it. But so let me ask you: did you watch any today? Was there anything good today from the Olympics at the Americans?
I watched tennis. Today, Nadal played and Andy Murray played. They both won. Venus won in her mixed doubles match. So that's what I was streaming today. And I guess I watched a little bit of like women's water polo this morning. The women's water polo team is like makes me the most tired of anything watching
it's
that.
Just
and they're amazing.
I know, right?
They're like
that's
all
amazing.
Super young and so that's that's what I caught earlier today. What happened with the green pools? Has there been any update?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. That? No, we haven't. I haven't seen anything. My guess is that they fixed it.
Cause, yeah, because right? I was trying to.
I would think
doing a bit of research on it and couldn't really find anything definitive about it.
It looks like I think this is the South African.
Yeah, this is the
goof,
villain.
The villain with his eye. With his, he's got his little iPod. You know, he's a villain when he doesn't even have a, you know, a phone. Who has an iPod anymore? Come on. Okay, so let me ask, you know, last question is just about, you know, tomorrow there'll be some more I think gymnastics probably wrapping up. But, I mean, they're starting to get to the point now where it's time to make that transition to more outdoor stuff like track and field. Is that coming up next week?
Yeah, that's next week. So they still have gymnastics, still has the individual apparatus. So the men will do that tomorrow night, and then the women on Saturday night.
What does that mean, individual apparatus?
Where instead of, like, tonight's the all-around, so it's everything combined. So that will be, like, you could win a gold for uneven bars. You can win a gold for floor.
So that's coming up. So they'll do there could still be gold from Gabby Douglas for doing the uneven bars.
Right. Oh, and I see. They're still looking for the mean faces because they kept finding... They kept, like, showing her and catching her with, like, this kind of, like, the mean Phelps face. But I'm sure it was, like, unintentional, just, like, a bad moment. But, again, they're trying to make it, like...
Yeah, they're manufacturing
Yeah, because, you know, what they're saying is that you have you have Allie and Simone who qualified, but Gabby Douglas was better than the rest of the field. And they were saying how there's, like, American gymnasts that aren't even here who are better than the rest of the field. And is that fair? And, you know, there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, all right. So
everyone else.
Seems like swimming did well. There'll be some more swimming tomorrow. And gymnastics will wrap up. And then it's track and field. Molly Green, fan jam in the Olympics for us. Thank you so much, Molly. And continue to root on the United States of America. It's a big night for the Olympic swimmers. The United States team does well across the board. Michael Phelps, Simone Manuel, first African-American swimmer to win. Also the first time we won in 100 meters. I think it was butterfly. I don't even know what the names of the... Is butterfly a thing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I believe that's what we won for, that she won. Simone won... I don't know. I lost it already.
There's anyway, the freestyle, the breaststroke.
She won the 100 meter something, and it was the first time since 1984 that an American swimmer has won that category.
Tremendous.
Yeah. And I had it up here on the screen, and it disappeared, so, you know, whatever. Also, the Chicago Bears game is over.
Yeah, how'd they do?
You're going to love this, man. David Fales came in, and they lost 22-0.
So they got shut out?
They got shut out.
In a preseason game?
In a preseason game against the Super Bowl champs. But here we go making excuses. I mean, they didn't play. They played. Von Miller didn't, you know, like, I didn't even play. I saw him on the sideline with a shirt on, but I don't know if he just plays a game, like a series, and he's out.
Probably.
But the point being that team is a far cry from, maybe not. I mean, maybe they'll go 16-0, but, you know, they have Mark Sanchez at quarterback. They seem to be in a point where they still have a good defense, but at the same time, they're not going full 100%. They're not going 0-100 on game one.
The Bears could not even score a point.
Come close to scoring a point.
Because, like, you figure at the end of the towards the end of the game, it's just kind of, you know, people that are scraping to make the team playing each other.
That's the thing that I guess if you buy a ticket and you go to a preseason game, you know, there's the experience of going to Soldier Field, and of course the experience of tailgating, being a part of that. But don't you expect at a certain time to at least have some garbage cleanup points?
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this is fun. This is football. Touchdown for number 14, you know, like that kind of thing. Nothing.
The other 14.
Three and out, right? Three and out city. That's what you got to see. You got to see how good we are at lining up for punts.
Ugh. I know. Have Mariani do. You play?
I saw him catch like two balls and get knocked down right away. So, there's a guy who's returning punts. Like, again, I didn't get a chance to really watch the game because we did the show. But there seemed to be guys who were returning punts that were, you know, I guess the guy that they're counting on because it was like the first punt and I didn't know who he was. He had long hair. That's all I'm saying. Although, I again, you know, as Adam Hogue said, you know, Devin Hester may not be healthy. That's why nobody's picking him up.
Yeah.
It might be over for him, but it just would be so much better than what I saw back there, which was nobody.
Remember the days? I mean, we can talk about this ad nauseum, but the days when the special teams were a weapon. Not just Devin Hester,
yeah, right.
But I mean, like
Ian Badejo.
Yeah, the coverage teams.
The coverage, yeah, Charles. You know, Jack Silverstein talked about Charles Tillman being forgotten for being a huge special teams contributor when Devin Hester was returning punts. You know, he also came off the edge a couple times and blocked a few. Remember, he was a big part of special teams unit. I always got frustrated as a fan while you'd have your starting corner, your lockdown corner on punt returns. But he was part of that team that would create wedge, and he liked going out there and blocking. So that's, you know, that might be part of the reason when he left Chicago, this is where it kind of went downhill. So it's not always just about the return game. It's about who's blocking. We'll have much, much more with Doug Plank, Adam Hogue, and everybody to wrap up the Bears loss and continued preseason later next week. All right, I love that music. It is a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman, and it is Thursday night, so that means it's time for Swap Meet.
Yes.
Greg Flam's in studio with me, 312-981-7200. We all own something that connects us to this great city of Chicago. Whether it's memorabilia or a souvenir, we go out of our way to keep it from the trash bin. When we move, we take good care to preserve it. It's not junk. It's Chicago history. What do you have tonight? Swap Meet. It's like Chicago Antique Roadshow. You call in and impress us with what you have, and we'll tell you if it's worth anything. 312-981-7200. You can call or you can text. It's a chance to brag about the things we've collected over the years, and boy, do we like to brag. My guest, Greg Flam. He goes by the name DuPage Picker on Twitter. Good to see you, Greg. How are you, man?
Hi, Justin. Thanks for having me back.
Did you have a good week on the estate sale?
Last weekend was better. It just started today, and there was only a handful. Nothing to brag about today. But I brought some stuff. Hopefully, we'll spark some conversation.
All right. What do you got today?
All right. So Tuesday is the anniversary of Elvis's death. So I brought some pretty rare stuff that I found last weekend for that. And a lot of the stuff, like, you know, like while he was alive, the fan club stuff still gets quite a bit of money.
Really?
Yeah. If it's, you know, if it's something that was put out after his death, then it's, you know, it's not.
I mean, when you talk about memorabilia, when it comes to Elvis, a lot of touristy tchotchkes come to mind. Is it hard because there's so much about Elvis to sort of find something in the diamond in the rough?
Right. Like even finding a mint condition record of Elvis is like no big deal because he made so many of them, you know. Obviously he was huge, so it was like they have so much stuff, but the stuff, you know, earlier on his career, like fan club stuff, that can get a decent penny. So if you have, you know, like pre-76 stuff, you know, that can get a little bit more. I also brought some early Harris Bank collectibles.
Sure.
The ceramic tiger. This is pretty common. I see these, and they make the same shape, but it seems like there's different shading, probably five different shades of this.
So that's a bank?
It's like a ceramic bank. It's got the plug on the bottom, so you don't have to actually crack it open.
Lion.
But yeah, it's got, you know, that's kind of common, but it still fetches, you know, maybe $20, $22. So it's not bad if you can find it for a couple bucks. Yeah.
And that's the kind of stuff that you're going to find in an estate sale?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely that bank or any Harris. And there's so much Harris stuff, obviously, later on. They did everything with sports teams, Bulls, right. Bears, everything.
Does it matter, like, when you start stuff that's like we've been talking about, like it just seems like so much Bears memorabilia came from car dealerships. But when it comes to bank, does it matter if the bank is still in business or not?
Probably not. And it probably means more if it's not in business, like an older,
like a LaSalle bank.
Yeah, something older. And then the last item I brought was the Animal House John Belushi as Bluto Blutarski animated doll. And you press the button, and it says about five different sayings. It plays, I can't remember the name of the Animal House song.
Animal House.
Yeah, so if you wanted to test that out, there's a button.
Yeah,
we
have to do that.
Right, so there's that. And that gets about maybe $40 still.
Really?
And that's something you can still find for maybe $5 or, you know, at a garage sale. You know, probably a estate sale, they probably charge a little bit more. But Yeah, just, you know, I brought some stuff that's kind of common for estate sales.
All right. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. That's the number. And also, you can text that number if you have some collectibles that you'd like to discuss with Greg. You know, it's interesting because it does feel like now would be a good time for garage sales. It just seems like that summer kind of thing.
Yeah, peak season right now.
Is it?
Yeah.
Why is it now? Just
because it's so warm and you know, now any day of the week can be a garage sale. It doesn't have to be a Friday or Saturday. I've seen them on Tuesday, Wednesdays. Tomorrow's weather doesn't look so great, so a lot of them will start tomorrow, but I don't know how the weather's
going to
affect.
Do you hit up the garage sales too, or are you just more of an estate sale?
You know, I tend to do garage sales more in this season because there's better value. You know, people are selling things for a dollar or two that could be worth hundreds. You know, where in an estate sale, they kind of know what they have, unless you get what I call a hoarder estate sale, where you can fill a big box and they're not going to go through every little thing in that box. They're just going to eyeball it and say, oh, $25, get out of here. So unless it's a hoarder estate sale, then I'll prioritize that. But otherwise, I'm making sure I'm at the garage sales early.
All right. 312-981-7200. Let's go to the lines. Let's start with Duke. Duke, what do you got? How you doing, bud?
Hey, Duke.
I'm doing well. I have a little miniature car. It's a model of a pedal car, a child's pedal car.
Okay.
It's about 3 inches long.
Mm-hmm.
1956 Thunderbird is made by Gearbox.
Gearbox, yeah.
Is it played? Is it a toy that has been played with, or is it still in the box?
Oh no, it's still in the original box.
And you say it's like a pedal car, a small version of a pedal car?
Yes, and when you turn the rear wheels, the pedals actually turn.
Okay.
Duke,
the steering wheel turns the front wheels.
Why is it still in the box? Why don't you take it out and play with it?
Because he's smart.
Because I think it's worth something.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah, I would definitely look that up. I've never heard of that brand. Deerbox or Gearbox with
Gear,
a G or D?
Probably Gear with a G, right?
Gearbox.
Gear, okay, yeah.
Yeah,
I definitely would check that out. And if it's still in the box, obviously if it's 50s, it's going to be worth something.
Okay. Thanks, Duke. Thanks for calling in. All right, let's go to Kathy. Kathy, it's Swap Meet. What do you got? What do you want to brag about, Kathy?
I want to brag that at a resale shop, I found two cardboard Beetle posters.
Right.
And one says the Silver Beatles, and it's got Pete Best, original drummer.
Right, that's really early.
On it. And it says, appearing at the Caravan Club, Liverpool, January 4th through the 18th, 1962.
Right, that's awesome. The only thing I would be concerned with that is find out if it's a reproduction or do you know the history of it? Like, did you get it when you were a teenager or how did you come upon it?
No, I found them at a resale shop for 50 cents.
Oh, wow. Then I
have the one when they were on the Ed Sullivan Show. And it says the Beatles and the Ringos and this one.
Right.
And it's all autographed.
Wow. Yeah, I would.
Autographed by the Beatles?
Yeah, four or how many?
It's all four of them.
Does it look like real photographs or was it like printed with that?
It looks like real.
You should definitely have both of those items checked out for sure.
I know, but you know, I don't know where to go to have it. I've been.
There's an alley. You're gonna go behind the hot dog stand,
right?
To the alley, right by the dumpster, and ask Ray. Ask for Lil Ray.
You're gonna see a guy that looks like a wizard.
Right.
What I would do is first go to like maybe a sports memorabilia shop and ask them, hey, how can I get these signatures authenticated? And they'll probably point you in the right spot. Otherwise, maybe if you're not good with eBay yourself or looking up something online, have a family member look it up first and then take it in.
And Kathy, when you go to the sports memorabilia shop, say, Justin Kaufman told me to come here, so you guys mess with me? You try to do anything goofy?
You got the download on you.
Yeah, you tell me, and then I'll come in there. How about that?
Okay.
Does that sound good?
It sounds good, and I really appreciate your help.
That's all some right. awesome
Justin,
stuff. Hang
love
on
your
to that.
Show.
Thanks, Kathy. Thank
show.
You. Thank you.
I'm from the Wonder Lake area, and I listen to you all
awesome.
The time.
Awesome. Awesome. You know how I feel about the Wonder Lake area. That came from Wonder Lake. So I've got a soft spot in my heart for people like Kathy. Yeah, she goes to a sports memorabilia shop, and they start to pull some sort of goofy
thing. Yeah, they'll
thing.
Say, oh, it's not worth anything.
She just has to hit the download button. There's
right.
a button. It's like the
bat signal in the sky.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We got some great texts, also some people on the line. Mark, don't go anywhere. I like this Dominic's Monopoly. We'll talk with Mark about that coming up. We'll take a quick break. It's Swap Meet. Greg Flamm is here. Stay with us. It's Swap Meet here on the download. Greg Flamm's in studio at DuPage Picker on Twitter. It's going to make a Facebook page this weekend. So then we could just post. So someone like Kathy could just post a picture of that, and you can interact with that.
And I'd be happy to help do some research on that itself.
You just
message her.
You just totally. Everyone's like, I'm in.
All right.
They're like, we will go. We're going to friend Greg.
Right.
That's it. All right. Let's keep going here. We're evaluating each other's Chicago memorabilia. 312-981-7200. The line you can text, you can call. It's go to Mark. Mark, what do you got, Mark?
Hello.
How you doing, buddy?
Hello.
Hey, Mark.
Okay. I have two items. One, my deceased wife worked for Dominic's, and I got a Dominic's Monopoly game. Never been opened.
Wow.
So what does that mean? What do you mean Dominic's Monopoly game? So it's like instead of Monopoly, it's like the deli department? Like instead of B&O Railroad, it's like produce?
I'm assuming they made it like exclusive for employees. It wasn't sold at a store, right?
I tell you the truth, I have no idea. I mean, I just know I got it. And it says Dominic's on it. And like you said, it's related to the store.
Okay, Mark, I think what we're trying to ask is, can we come over and play it? Because it sounds
let's
like
break that baby open.
Yeah, that sounds like something I would want to do. I as a former Dominic's employee, I want to see what the properties are. Do you know what some of the properties are?
I don't have it in front of me right now.
No problem. Is it kind of the full size Monopoly type box, or is it a smaller?
Yeah, it looks like
that sounds cool. I would definitely look that up. Have someone look that up for you.
Yeah.
Okay. And the second item I have, the 1967 Topps complete set in mint condition. I had it mailed to me when I was a kid, baseball card.
Wow. Yep. 1967.
Yeah, I would, again, take that to Sports Memorabilia and have them check that out.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, baseball, like sets, mint condition sets and things like that, they have to be difficult to make money off of because there are so many printed.
That's true. It's easier to sell it, though. He has the full set, so that will be easier to sell if he was going to sell it. That's for sure.
Name the Mark, real quick. Name the who was playing? Who was the best player in 1967 on the Cubs?
Oh, I'm a White Sox fan.
Right,
but
there you go. Who's the best on the White Sox?
For 67, I don't know. Gary Peters, maybe.
Yeah. See, all right. Right then, I'm like $12.
Yeah. Right.
Thanks, Mark. Thank you for
thanks
calling
for calling.
Let's go to the texts. This is fun tonight. 708, a Super 8 movie projector and screen. That's pretty generic.
Yeah, that is.
I mean, Super 8, I guess, is kind of cool, but
yeah,
I don't know if it's
that's
worth
something you have to sell on Craigslist because it's going to be too heavy to ship. You're going to lose money on it.
And also, there's probably not a tremendous, like, people aren't going. They really need to know, like, if you're going to be an aficionado of that kind of stuff, they're like, oh, my God, a
right.
cow is talking
well,
about
more importantly
1442.
Are the reels, like the pre-recorded reels of either cartoons or movies of
that
would,
stuff's
are
important.
Worth more, than the actual camera.
847 says back in the 70s or 80s, I had a Harris Bank stuffed animal.
There you go.
The lion with its large and floppy with eyeglasses.
They probably made that in every size imaginable.
Really?
But if it's from like 70s, it's worth something. I'd say about $30 early.
Really? It's
worth
$30 for bank marketing?
It's crazy. I mean, that's what I look for every garage show. I look for old advertising.
I'm really into the idea that so far swap meet is what a car dealer gives you or a bank. Those are the things that are worth something in Chicago.
Yep.
Let's keep going. Let's go to Ed. Ed, what do we got, Ed? What are we bragging about on swap meet this week?
Well, I have a pristine poster that they gave out. I'm not sure if it's 84 or 85, but it's all the generations of Bears uniforms. George Halas is in the top left corner, and Richard Dent, there's three or four rows. I'm driving, so I can't look at it to be sure, but there's three or four rows of all the different generations of uniforms from Halas to Richard Dent.
Wow.
Do you remember where you got that, a car dealer, or where'd you get that?
No, it was a giveaway at a Bears game by Dominic's, and those kinds of posters and stuff usually, if they give away 10,000, most of them are destroyed.
Right.
They,
yeah.
give, at the beginning of the game.
Right, because everyone's carrying them around. They get wrinkled and everything. Yeah, so if you have it in great condition, yeah, definitely look that up. I'm going to guess $30 to $50 offhand, but it could be more. But I would definitely check it out.
I'll never sell it, but I just was wondering.
Yeah. Sure. No, that's good.
That's kind of cool. Thanks, Ed. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks, guys. Great show. Thanks, guys.
All right, let's go to Sylvia. Sylvia, what do you got? What do you want to brag about, Sylvia?
Well, I have a telegram from Richard Daly.
Yeah, you got it. That's my soft spot.
Sent to my grandmother when my grandfather passed away. Is there any, in the late 1950s, is there any value in that? Or
before we get to the value, was it a political like telegram? Was he like, was your grandfather of political note? Are you of a political family?
He was a businessman in Chicago, had his business in the Board of Trade.
Yeah, I'm saying it's really not worth that much to be sorry.
Bite your tongue, Greg.
Right, I know. I mean, I wouldn't say totally worthless, but I don't know.
I like it a lot. It's very personal, and I would never, if I were you, Sylvia, I'd never give it up, but I would brag to everybody that you got a telegram.
Sure,
your family got a telegram from the Mayor Daly. I think that's pretty great.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Sylvia. I like that. See, I'm a sucker.
Very personal.
I'm a sucker, and every week is the political stuff. If you'd be like, I was at a luncheon, and Mayor Daly
spit out
his gum onto a napkin, a bank napkin,
and I
got it at a Chevy dealer on the south side, and that's the swap meet.
Yeah, no, that's... It's crazy. I mean, but I definitely, that's the stuff I would pick up and at least look at it in an estate sale. Like if I'm going through a box of papers.
Is there a lot of, I mean, you've got all that Jane Byrne stuff, but I would think that it gets harder and harder to find Richard J. Daly stuff.
It is. But if I find it, I try to grab it. If it's not, like, that's too personalized, but if I find something else, like, you know, a book or something, or something that was a little bit more generic, you know, I would definitely throw it in my box of stuff if I can get it for 50 cents or less. Or
yeah. 630 says, Cabbage Patch Dolls in the original box.
That's...
those were a huge deal in
the 80s,
they
were huge. And
were they a huge deal, or was that just all like 80s kids garbage?
It was huge, and it was great if you could, you know, never have played with it, and it's in the box.
Good luck.
It takes a long time to sell, but you could still get a decent dollar for
it. Is that the kind of thing as well, because it was the 80s and there was this hoopla over it, that there's a lot of them?
There's a lot, and there's definitely a lot that have been played with. So if it's pristine in the box, that's great. The other thing is it came with what were called adoption papers.
Yeah,
and it actually had
the
thing. And I find those loose, like laying around at sales. And I still pick them up because I'm an idiot. But I'm thinking, okay, there's got to be that someone who's missing that, you know, that adoption paper.
And they're
personalized names on
it's
it, too.
It's like, you should go track that doll down, ring a doorbell, and be like, hi.
Yep.
We wanted to let you know that they found your adoption papers.
Yeah, I'm the end of the rainbow guy, is what they call me.
That's what you have to put on the side of your truck.
Right. End of the rainbow.
End of the rainbow.
That's
Greg
my
Flam.
Next eBay page. Yeah. End of the rainbow.
At end of the rainbow.
Right.
All right. 708 says, my parents have a red, white, and blue colored rotary dial telephone from the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago. If you try to sell that thing,
that is awesome.
I will find you.
That is awesome.
That is awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. Any
is it the same phone that Mayor Mayor Daly was yelling at the senator from New Hampshire up there?
That
forget
old
you.
Phones are awesome.
Forget
I mean, and everybody should have a rotary phone just to show the previous generations what we had to go through to dial, you know, to get to a number. I mean, I was at the tail end of that, and then we went to touchtone, but I still remember using a rotary phone.
The rotary. Oh, these are good. 847. I have an original steering wheel from the 1973 Ford Pinto. What's it worth?
I couldn't tell you what it's worth, but I'm sure you could sell that. I mean, especially 70s cars.
Where do you go? Do you go to like a...
That's something you could probably put on eBay. eBay has a section called eBay Motors that they specialize in that. Or you could do Craigslist, but you'll probably sell faster on, you know, eBay.
All right, 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. This has been I'm loving. There's so much more to get to, and I want to hear what you want to brag about. 312-981-7200. It's Swap Meet Thursday night. Greg Flam's here. Stay with us. Thanks, Veronica. It's the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right. Excited. Swap meet. Greg Flam is here. He's on Twitter at @DuPagePicker. Talking about our Chicago memorabilia. We're bragging about it. The listeners, Download Nation, text and phone, 312-981-7200. I want to get to the Elvis stuff that you have as well, but let's get to the phones. You want to
sure.
get to the phones?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's go to Marilyn. Marilyn, what do we got? Marilyn, what do you want to brag about?
I want to brag about my Mary Heartline bracelet.
Hmm. Is it the line Mary Heart or Mary Heartline?
Mary Heartline from the show, I think it was called The Circus.
Oh. Hmm. Wow.
That's going
all right. So
bad.
It's jewelry.
How'd you get it?
It's a child's bracelet for sure. And my mother must have sent in for it when I was a little girl. It's well worn.
Wow.
It still has its charms on it.
Awesome. Yeah. I would have someone look that up if you can't. If you're not comfortable doing it yourself, have someone look that up. And
okay.
Are you good with texting in a picture? Maybe you can text us a picture of it.
Sure. Sure.
Okay. Yeah, I'll put you on hold, and Pete will get you. You could actually text the line, a 7200 line. But Marilyn, let me ask you a question, though. I would say, is this the kind of thing where you just want to see what it is and what it's worth, and you're going to keep it? Does it have sentimental value to you?
It's sentimental.
Yeah,
I have no reason to sell it.
Sure.
Yeah, right. I like it. I like this a lot. I'm interested. Your mom sent in for something, got it. It was something that you wore when you were a kid?
Always. Wow. I wore it and wore it and wore it. I loved it. It's little because I was a little girl at the time.
Yeah. What's fun to do with that stuff is, do a little Martha Stewart thing, like make a shadow box if you have the other items that were associated with that. You know, put something together because if, that's sentimental, I would like try to make something that you can display. Well, why not get some more enjoyment out of it?
I was thinking about donating it to the WGN. Their, they have a display of something like that. So,
okay.
No, don't
donate anything. Here's what you do, Marilyn. Figure out how to get that thing around your wrist and wear it. And keep wearing it.
Right.
That's what I say. Keep wearing it. I think that you should be proud and sentimental of the Mary Heartline bracelet that you've been wearing since a kid.
Right. You know how trends go.
It'll come
back.
I do
have one other item.
All right. What do you got?
I have a straight razor. That's from Loeffler and Sykes, our drummer, and it was priced at $3. It's in a leather case, and it says sharpened by Otto Pomper, 32 North Clark Street, Chicago.
Yeah, back then, you had to go somewhere to get your razor sharpened.
That's awesome. I like that a lot. Yeah, that's cool. That reminds you, that harkens back to a day. I mean, 32 North Clark Street, that would have been, a little bit of a state in Clark Street kind of thing? 32 North?
Yeah. I don't have any idea.
Clark, but Madison and Clark?
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. All right, Marilyn, that's awesome.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you for those. Good start to the second half here. Let's go to Nancy. Nancy, what do we got, Nancy? What do you want to brag about?
Well, I have three etched glasses that are from the Chicago World's Fair, 1893. Mm-hmm. And what I'm told is that they sold the Pepsi in their clear glass.
Wow.
And it's got, it also has my great grandfather's initials engraved in it.
So was your great grandfather there?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
1893. Wow.
Yeah. With the initials, it's probably something you want to keep, I would think. And if
it
not,
depends.
everything's got a price. Right?
How many zeros are on the back, right?
Well, you could, that's something you can easily look up. The World's Fair stuff is all over online.
I will say this, and I am a novice, Nancy. I want to make something very clear to the listeners at home. I have no training or education in this whatsoever. That's all Greg's area. But I will say that in doing this for the last 6 weeks, 1893 World's Fair stuff or any World's Fair stuff has come up frequently, which tells me that it's probably not worth as much as you would think it is because there's a lot of people collecting. Am I right, Greg?
Right.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Obviously, the older it is, probably a little bit more value because it's not as much out there as, say, a 1940, 50, whatever, World's Fair. So, but definitely have someone look that up for you if you can't do it yourself.
I may not be an appraiser, but I play one on the radio.
Right.
Nancy, thank you for calling in. I appreciate
that.
Thank you. All right, let's go to Tom. I'm enjoying this. Tom, what do you want to brag about? I like yours here. What do you got?
Hey, Tom.
Well, I got some I would never sell.
Okay.
It's my grandmother's 1929 high school yearbook. She went to Hyde Park High School on the South Side.
Oh, awesome.
Right. Yeah, yearbooks are good.
Yeah, and it's got a signed photograph of Amelia Earhart.
Wow.
What?
Yeah, that's
yeah,
huge.
Amelia Earhart went to Hyde Park High School for 2 years, and then she came back in 1929 and did as a rock star. They had this big ceremony for her.
Wow.
So that year, they dedicated the yearbook to aviation.
That's awesome.
And it's got a full picture in there, and it's got a sign, her signature's right on it. I was always curious what it was worth, because she died young, Amelia Earhart. So a lot of her stuff is worth a lot of money.
Yeah,
I would never sell this, but I'm just curious what it was
worth.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, you've got something good there, so I
and
couldn't put a price on it.
It's in pristine condition, because when my grandmother, like I said, she graduated in 29, she bought a house in 39, stayed until she died in 2011. She kept them in the attic, and the attic never got, you know, super hot or anything. They're in the 4 yearbooks that are in mint condition.
No, that's something
and
unique.
The signature is still there in great shape.
No, you've got something great there. I would definitely have it checked out and definitely put that in your will. You know, pass
yeah,
it down.
I would say, Tom, and again, I'm not an appraiser. I just play one on the radio, but I'd say $500 million. That's how much you can get for that.
No,
I
it's
would
not,
never sell it. There's
don't
no
sell
way
it.
In the world I'd sell it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's pretty cool, man.
Keep it in good condition.
I like that. Thanks, Tom. That was great. Yep. Let's move to Dave. Dave, what do you got, Dave? What do you want to brag about?
My grandfather was he worked over at Wrigley's Chewing Gum. He was a worldwide engineer. He worked on William Wrigley's boat dock.
Wow.
On his lake house.
Okay.
And
where would that be?
Retired,
like Lake Geneva?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because when you take that tour, like on the lake, they're like, "There's another mansion from Wrigley."
Yep, that was the place.
Right.
Yeah, right.
So he made the mechanical boat lift for him, and the old factory, you know, it was on 35th and Ashland or whatever, and it's sad to see that go.
Yeah.
But he put his in his thank you in his retirement letter. That was the year I was born, so he says. And thank you for, you know, the years of your service and God bless, you know, me, Davey Senior or Davey Junior and, wow. You know, and
so
his
William Wrigley's blessing.
Endeavor,
man. That's pretty good. That's a big Chicago.
Yeah.
That's
just,
I don't know if that's,
that
again, that's
crazy.
Personal, but that's a great brag.
Yeah. It's very cool. It is a good brag for sure. Yeah.
That's a great brag. I mean, there's not too many time that the founding, you know, sort of celebrity fathers of our city are calling you out in a letter saying, hey, Davey. Yeah. Right. Right.
No, you got something great. That's awesome.
All right. Thanks, Dave. That's a good one. I like that.
Okay.
Thanks.
You know how much a signature was worth.
Yeah. Right. I don't think it's,
that was it.
I don't think it's probably worth much. Only
yeah,
because
it's the personal thing, but yeah,
right?
For you, you should definitely
absolutely.
Want to keep it.
Yeah.
All right, thanks,
Dave.
Yeah. All right, buddy. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, so I got a ton of texts, but let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll get to them. 312-981-7200. We're playing. This is pretty much my favorite hour of all time. Swap meet. Where I play an appraiser, even though on the radio. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. Stay with us. It's Download here on WGN Radio. Swap Meets. Greg Flams here at DuPage Picker. He's a, what would you call yourself? A online, like, estate
seller? Yeah, reseller.
Reseller.
I guess. Yeah. Jack
yeah,
of
like
all
that.
Trades.
Jack of all trades. Reseller.
Yep.
All right. Lots of texts. Let's get through them so we can wrap up on time tonight. 630 says they have an original Fasano pie plate. What is that? Is it worth anything? Fasano, F-A-S-A-N-O.
I'll assume that's a restaurant or a pie company.
Yeah.
The tins. Yeah, I couldn't give you a value, but I would look it up. I look up everything. You never know. You know, I mean, a pack of bubble yum gum from the 80s is like $300 is sold for.
What?
I am not kidding. If you Google or look up on eBay, bubble yum bubble gum, and click the sold section, they've sold for $300 and
like
$90.
A pack, like an
unopened pack,
kind
an
of
unopened pack,
pack
of bubble gum gum from
Jeez,
the 80s.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's you never know.
606 says they have certified copies of the puppets Kukla and Ali, not used. What are they worth? That's a good one.
That
Those
is a good
Chicago,
one.
Right?
Yeah, and it's a item that you know people want to collect from their
what
childhood.
What does that mean? Certified copies. So is that a thing where they were the actual puppets that were used?
Yeah, maybe they got them from like an auction or something where someone took the time and. Had them mounted or
because did they sell
those
as toys or were those the actual puppets they're talking
back
about?
Then they probably sold them as toys and now it's a collectible so
I like that. How much would those go for you think?
I really couldn't even guess. I'm going to say guess. 100,
I'll
200.
Guess. I'll guess.
Go for it.
28,000.
There you go. Divided by.
Something's telling me after, there's not a lot of 28,000s, right? After fees. Right. Something tells me that's not usually a number. All right. 815, unopened Wheaties, Michael Jordan box.
Yeah, probably $10 to $20. If it's signed, obviously more. But there are so many of those out there. I made the mistake early in my reselling career. Just like got so excited to see one, and the fact that I could actually buy it or afford it. I think I paid $10, and I actually sold it for probably $11. So
you learned.
Yeah, you learned.
All right, let's keep going. Let's see. Original Cubs, no lights at Wrigley Field t-shirt. Any value? If not, it's going to my kid.
If it's never been worn, definitely hang on to that. Or you could sell for probably $40 to $50, maybe more.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So you really have to ask yourself a question. Is $40 or $50 worth more than your kid?
Yeah, it's parking for a Cubs game at least. I don't know.
Right. All right, let's keep going. We've got a Safeway by Ross automatic toothbrush.
Yeah, that
not really sure what
stumps
that means.
Me, yeah.
I don't know what that is. It's an automatic toothbrush, yeah. An old automatic toothbrush. And my guess is that it's not used. It was a Chicago Pie Company Fasano at 6201 West 65th Street.
Yeah, I would look at the pie tin. I'm assuming it's a pie tin. I would look that up. Someone's going to want that, I know. I don't know what it – they might $10, $15 maybe for it.
If the default seems to be anywhere between $10 and $50. So
yeah,
anyone who's calling up thinking this is Antique Roadshow and they're like, I've got a vase, and you're like, you've got one. Oh, yeah, it's $10,000. That's not happening.
Right. And you know how it is. It only takes one person to buy it and two people to create a bidding war. I've sold a belt buckle before where I got it for $1, and you always want to put it the first couple times you list it, put it as an auction because you don't know if you're going to get those two people that are going to want to fight it out.
Right.
And I've said stuff sold for $200 and something that I thought, oh, my God, I get $15 for, and it's gotten bid up to, you know, 200 or more.
All right, let's go to David. David, what do you want to brag about, David?
Yes, I got a Square grand piano.
Cool.
It's a Bradbury Smith, and it's from 1871.
Wow.
Wow.
That's a big
and,
year.
And I'm looking to try to get an idea of how much it's worth.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's an old piano. Is it in good condition?
Oh, yeah. It's been inside all the time. It might have an interesting history, too. It came off from southern Illinois, and I think it might have been involved some way politically, you know, in the state house. Or,
oh, my gosh. Right. You're talking, you know what, that's right around Abraham Lincoln time, too.
Right. If you could prove that backstory a little bit, that would definitely help. The big thing with that is it is a big thing, and that's moving it or having someone be able to pick it up. It's the same thing with old sewing machines, you know, from early 1900s. They look great.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
like, you know, you're excited to see it, but then the actual move it or have someone, it loses value right there, just the fact you got to haul it around.
David, Greg's going to give you all the good stuff. I'm going to give you the marketing help. I'm like your Hollywood guy. When you say it's a, when it's a piano, 1800s, I automatically go, it was the piano that Abraham Lincoln wrote the papers in which he debated Frederick Douglass. Right?
Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Yeah, and then you say, and it's, you know, I had the pay. I mean, you just have to trust me on this. And and also, he chopped down that cherry tree, and he's not afraid to lie. Boom.
There you go.
It.
No,
I'm
both of those.
Good, okay. Both of those.
You run with that.
All right, thanks, David. I think that when you're talking about old pianos, I mean, that's a tough. You really, there's probably a market for
there,
that.
There's somebody,
probably appraisers for that kind of stuff.
Right. Someone will appraise it, and I'm sure there's someone that wants it. It's just, like I said, moving it is a big expense, and that cuts into any kind of value, really.
Doris.
Yes.
All right, what do you got, Doris? What are you going to brag about?
Hi, Doris.
Well, my husband had 26 Big Little Books, and
Big
he
little
was
books?
Born in, the little dinky ones that was original comic books.
Okay, I've come across a few of those,
Are they worth anything?
I would, you probably want to sell them together as a bundle. I would start maybe $49 and definitely do an auction. Don't do, like, buy it now.
What is an old lady like me that doesn't do internet? How do I find somebody to do it?
Most people have a family member that can help them with it, or I'm actually thinking about offering a course at the library. Yeah. You know, yeah, is what I'm thinking about doing to help people do that.
A library?
Yeah, maybe check your library, see if they're offering a course. I know I'm going to hit up the Darien Library to see if, you know, they'll let me do a course there. I'm kind of spilling the beans here on the radio. But, okay. I do meet a lot of people like yourself who aren't familiar with eBay or how to sell something even non-eBay.
Yeah.
But, that's something I come across, and I would...
I took them down to a gal in Highland Park, and she took one look at them, and she says, oh, they aren't worth a darn thing.
Don't believe that.
There's Greg something. Says no. Greg
there is,
says they're still
there's
a shot.
Somebody for everything. I mean, I've seen it myself. So.
I think you're right. If you Google how to sell on eBay, there probably is, some classes that are being
sure. I'm sure YouTube videos too,
community.
Tutorials and stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Good luck with that. Steve Irwin, Crocodile Hunter, never opened a doll.
A doll. Yeah. That's
is that a thing? Are they pulling? Yeah. That's a thing.
If it's never been opened, yeah, I've seen some of the Crocodile Dundee stuff.
This is Crocodile Hunter. This is Steve Irwin, Crocodile Hunter
doll. From that? Wow.
They made a doll of Steve Irwin?
Yeah. I would look that up. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Well, I think it's pretty... I think this has been a successful swap meet. I'm not going to lie.
One of the better ones. Yeah.
And before we go, tell me about these Elvis things that you were showing me.
Okay, I was at an estate sale, and the woman, I'm assuming the woman who had lived there, was a huge Elvis fan, because they everything was from like Vegas 1972, and they took like everything. I mean, they bought all the souvenir stuff as well, but they took everything that was there. I have the swizzle stick from their drink. I have the ashtray, which doesn't say Elvis on it, but it says Las Vegas Hilton. And if you just saw that by itself, that's like a $3 item. But she like took everything, just dumped it in her purse, and a couple of things are, you know, could be $200-$300 items.
Really?
Yeah, I found a menu. It's like a dinner show thing there. And cannot find that online at all. And I've sold some other stuff, you know, Elvis, that has been in the $100 to $300 range. And this looks something like that. So I also have a mail order catalog that I cannot find this on anywhere, the internet or eBay. And I'm hoping that's a bigger one. But the other stuff is kind of $20 items, tour program, souvenir, photo books.
Big weekend this weekend for garage sales, but where are you going to be? Tell us a little bit about where people can find you.
They can usually find me at the Darien Flea and Farmers Market on 75th and Fairview by the Westwood Park, park district there for Darien. Mm-hmm. There's volleyball, and that's there if you're on 75th Street.
If you're inspired by the Olympics.
Right. That's from 3 to 7 every Wednesday until Labor Day, okay. Weather permitting. And other than that... I'm hoping next week we can push the Facebook page and people can start sending photos and everything, and we can go that route.
And if you get good at making Facebook pages, you can go to the library and then also offer those courses.
Right, and I'll let you know when that starts.
Great to see you, Greg Flam.
Thanks,
on
Justin.
Twitter at DuPagePicker. You can see him at the Darien Flea Market Flea
Farmers
Market? Farmers Market. Wow, together.
Yep.
All right, that's Wednesdays 3 to 7. And we will be back next Thursday for another episode of Swap Meet. Thanks to everybody who decided to brag tonight.
Thanks, Justin.
That's going to do it tonight for The Download. We'll be back tomorrow night. We've got a great show tomorrow night. A new documentary is going to be at the Black Harvest Film Festival, Tear the Roof Off, which is a documentary about Parliament Funkadelic and George Clinton and some of the rougher parts of George Clinton as a businessman and as a contributor. I will say that members of Parliament Funkadelic are going to be in studio tomorrow night. We're going to talk about that tremendous, tremendous musical history and talk about how it wasn't all sort of funk on stage. Obviously, a lot going on off stage, but we'll talk about that tomorrow on The Download. Dane Neal's in tonight for Patty Vasquez. Dane, good to see you.
It is good to see you.
How you been?
I've been just super busy, just crazy busy. It's been an insane summer.
All
but,
right.
Very,
that's good.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. Yeah, right. It hasn't been like breaking rocks or anything. But
right.
But coming in, how awesome. What a great segment, Swap Meet. You know, you love those shows. I mean, they do what they can on Antiques Roadshow, but, you know, you bring up, they spend half the show like Ming vases, you know, and some Indian blanket from
pretentious.
Like, the Navajos. You know, it's just not the kind of stuff that any of us will ever have.
It's really, exactly. It's not. I've got a. I've got some cleats that I took off of offensive lineman from the Bears in 1982.
These are the things that people want to hear about, and people know. And you know, and like Pickers, it's rusty bicycles and old motorcycles, a lot of that. And then you wonder how these people have a whole town of sheds. Barns, really, in my backyard. What do these people do for a living?
Yeah.
That you can, number one, own that much land and then collect all that stuff. Oh, he'll never sell it. Well, why? Are they just like, they must be royalty or something.
Yeah, right.
But it made me think of a couple things that I have is...
What do you got?
I've got a Cubs World Series banner pennant thing from 1984. Okay. For those of us, with memories on soul-crushing disappointment, you know that... The Cubs did not play in the World Series, but
There you go. Right, it's the same thing when they print the tickets for playoff and World Series games, and those can be worth quite a bit. And the pennant, I'd probably say 30 to 50.
Oh,
I was going to bring in a 1989 one where it lists all the names of that year because I think they went to the playoffs that year, 89. I was going to bring that in today.
Will Clark. We all remember Will Clark.
The pennants are worth money. The tickets that they didn't use are worth money if they're in good shape, obviously, also, if they're all wrinkled.
Too, had some friends that worked for FedEx, and after the Bears lost in the NFC Championship game a few years ago, the big box of jerseys and hats that they would have worn in the locker room.
Wow.
You think, you've got to think they print these up in advance.
Yeah.
You can't just like, oh, wow, they won. Let's get on this.
Right.
And so they send it because you never see those.
Yeah, those end up in third world.
Right. I was just going to say, they do that and then they ship them south.
It was like Worldware or something was the box. I had a picture of the box. You know, I was thinking, hey, yeah, get me one of those. But now there's a kid with probably no pants, but a Bears Super Bowl shirt.
Yeah, but it's probably pretty big.
Yeah, it's a big shirt. So, all right.
You know, that's cool. I definitely would research those a little bit more. But the pennant, for sure, you got something.
There you go, Dan. What's on the show tonight?
Well, we're going to talk about things that you have at home that maybe they were worth something. No, I'm just kidding. We're going to talk a little bit of Olympics, maybe some horrific Olympic injuries, maybe some of the best ones of all time. We'll talk about that. We're going to talk a lot about yoga. And I know for those people watching the video feed or that know me, I don't know that much about yoga, but it's the kind of thing we should all know more about. There's a big event coming up. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk a little bit about sports. We're going to have some food stuff on.
It's going to be an eclectic blend. That's great.
Of exciting things.
All right. We're looking forward to it. Dane Neal in for Patty Vasquez tonight.